is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy with Donald Jones. Normally, Donald will be joining us. Donald is on special assignment for a little bit today. And Chris Brown joins us, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com. Brownie, thanks for coming by.
Sure.
We had you in yesterday. You're back today. I think you like the show, right?
Yeah.
What's not to like?
There's a question I wasn't expecting. Good grief. What the heck is
that?
Well,
we love having you on.
That's your leadoff?
No, I've got a list for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thanks for coming by, though. Chris Brown filling in until Donald Jones is finished with his special assignment, and he'll be joining us as the show goes along. What a good show we have, Chris. You may want to stick around for the duration here today. We have, of course, Chris is here right now. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, Tanner Vallejo, Bills rookie linebacker, who's got a couple of incredible stories to tell. There's a video piece up on our website, BuffaloBills.com, Beyond the Blue and Red,
yep.
And it's about Tanner Vallejo and his younger brother, Hunter Vallejo, and how Tanner plays on his behalf. His younger brother, a victim of childhood cancer, still surviving, still around, and it's a really good piece. We're also going to talk about, I didn't realize until today, that Tanner Vallejo's family out west in Northern California involved, as I guess you might expect, in fighting all of those wildfires out there. Pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, got a family of firefighters. I was just talking about that with him today, too. So we'll have a written piece up for people that want to read more about it. But his family's basically fighting stuff at both ends of the state because
yeah.
He's got two older brothers. He's one of four. And so he's got two older brothers, one in Northern California where his dad has worked for 30 years in firefighting, and then he's got another one down in San Diego. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to talk to him about that.
Yeah, Tanner Vallejo is going to join us in studio at the bottom of this hour at 12:30. 1 o'clock, Steve Tasker makes his regular Tuesday appearance with us from the NFL on CBS. His thoughts on the Bills and what's going on around the National Football League. 1:30, Lorenzo Alexander, who always is with us on Fridays, but a special appearance from Lorenzo on the telephone today. Lorenzo is one of the organizers, obviously a Bills team captain, of the community outreach that's going on at five different locations throughout the Buffalo area today. Coming up later this afternoon, Lorenzo with a really a well-crafted statement released yesterday talking about how, I'll read you part of the statement. We hope this is not just a feel-good moment, but from these events, relationships are birthed and are continued into the future and become sustainable. It kind of is the next step beyond anthem protests. And Lorenzo, I know, has felt very strongly about maintaining a unified front. I'm going to talk with the Bills captain, Lorenzo Alexander, about that. But I love this reaction. I love the fact that they're out there in the community later today doing concrete things and hopefully starting a dialogue and starting a relationship between players and the community and the people most affected by some of the injustices that the players were protesting about.
Right. And I think this is what a lot of people were waiting to see. Okay. You know, you made your statement. Now let's see the statement turn into action. And I think, you know, the Bills are probably one of a handful of teams that have taken that first step, you know, out into the community. Not that they haven't done community efforts before. I mean, they're very active in the community and have been for decades. But I think they want to take some of the things that they felt they had to take a knee for and now mobilize
yeah.
and go in the community and take it to that step now. So it's going to be interesting to see.
And meantime, while that's going on here in Buffalo, right now in New York, the NFL owners will meet at 1 o'clock this afternoon. But for the last couple of hours, a delegation from the NFL Players Association and some players, about 12 or 13 players, are meeting with a small group of owners to talk about the anthem demonstrations and where they go from here. Bills owner Terry Pegula, part of that
yep.
Contingent of owners. And I think, you know, I don't know if anything momentous is going to come out of the meetings in New York today, Chris. To me, it looks like the first step in what could be and should be a pretty healthy dialogue about dealing with some of these issues, maintaining respect for the national anthem and moving forward, which is really what the league has been challenged to do and the players have been challenged to do.
Right. And the talk has been that the league wants to provide another platform for the players to speak out, demonstrate whatever they feel they need to do that's separate from the anthem. Because I think they feel at this point now it might be best served to give them a different kind of platform to utilize to get this message out about the social injustices or whatever the issue might be specifically that they take issue with, quite frankly.
So that's going on right now in New York, and if there's any news coming out of that, we'll let you know. As we said, Lorenzo Alexander at 1:30, and at 2 o'clock, we'll talk with Trey Wingo, a regular Tuesday visitor from NFL on ESPN, a host of ESPN's NFL Live. That's coming up at 2. Donald will be with us eventually. Chris is here for now, and you are welcome to join us as we're here until 3 o'clock with the John Murphy Show, live at One Bills Drive. Players' Day off, but we mentioned a lot of guys busy today with those community outreach programs. They return to practice tomorrow to get ready for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, from a football sense, we want to engage with you on that. And the phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or on Twitter, we have a Twitter poll up, and this is where we start the conversation today. As the Bills come out of the bye week, what would give the Bills their biggest boost coming out of the bye week? And I'm talking about short-term, like this week and maybe the next couple of weeks. What do you think could happen? What, you know, maybe a prediction is what we're looking for here. What do you think might happen that will give the Bills the biggest boost coming out of the bye week? The Twitter poll's been up for a couple of, well, for about 45 minutes or so. And so far, more offensive production is the overwhelming favorite on our Twitter poll. 66% of you say the Bills would get their biggest boost out of more offensive production. Pretty obvious. 24% say the favorable schedule will be a factor in the games immediately following the bye week. 6% say keep those takeaways coming, more defensive takeaways. 4% have something else in mind. Let us know what you think on that topic. What will give the Bills their biggest boost coming out of the bye week? Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. Or on Twitter at John Murphy Show. What would give the Bills the biggest boost? Two-thirds of the respondents so far, Chris, talking about more offensive production, which, as I said, is fairly obvious. I have heard you a couple of times with Sean McDermott, and I think with Rick Dennison, ask the question, trying to get to specifics, which good luck getting them, about what exactly can they do to boost the offensive production, right? I mean, that is the critical question for this team moving forward.
Right. I think you can also make the argument, too, though, that the first answer on that Twitter poll could cater to the second one. More favorable schedule could lead to more offensive production just by virtue of the fact that you're playing some weaker defenses, certainly weaker than the last few that you've faced with the likes of Carolina and Cincinnati in the not-too-distant past here on the schedule. So just by virtue of the fact that you might be playing a weaker defense could cater to more offensive production. But I think in the grand scheme of things, most fans are expecting this run game to eventually gain traction and provide the production that I think everybody anticipated from the outset based on the past 2 years. At least people are holding their breath and hoping for that because we haven't seen it since week one, basically. There haven't been signs of it. And I know we were talking on the show yesterday how interested we are to see what the breakdown is going to be in terms of how the run game is constructed coming out of the bye week and what the balance is going to be between some of the inside zone that's proven so successful for this offensive line and Shady McCoy the previous 2 years, along with the wide zone scheme, you know, that Rick Dennison brought with him here from Denver that has a proven track record in the league and that LeSean McCoy himself has been successful in his earlier years in Philadelphia where they ran a very similar scheme. So I think that's where that offensive production is largely rooted in your Twitter poll so far.
I hear commentators and read comments from people following the Bills that, well, this is it for the Buffalo offense. This is what we're stuck with. And maybe I'm stubborn. Maybe I'm naive. But obviously there's room for growth. And with the production they had, specifically in the run game the last couple of years, Chris, I believe that they will pick up the pace on the ground in particular. With that offensive line and that running back, and yes, it's been a rough four games since the opener against the Jets, but I do think they will turn the corner eventually, and it behooves them to do it sooner rather than later. Am I naive?
Well, the clock's ticking. I don't think there's any secret about that. I mean, you're 3-2. You had a little wiggle room at 3-1, you know, to play with, but now you're getting to what many people view as the more favorable part of your schedule, certainly with what's happened to Oakland, you know, through this first part of the season. I don't think they've measured up to what anybody anticipated they could be. They're having offensive line problems of their own. They're not running the ball as effectively as I think everybody expected, adding Marshawn Lynch to the fold. There's been no power running game to speak of with any kind of consistency for them. Derek Carr's coming off a fractured transverse process in his back. Looked rusty last week. Does he look better this week? On a short week, oh, by the way. You know, so I think Tampa, and until Oakland proves otherwise, are two games that look pretty favorable for the Bills' offense based on the defensive issues that those two teams have had. I mean, Tampa went down 31-0 last week in Arizona. Yeah. I mean, they ran into a buzzsaw and couldn't come up for air until the second half of that game, and it was only because the offense started stringing some drives together, somewhat in garbage time, that the defense got a breather because they got worn out up and down that track in Arizona last week.
So let's hear from you. The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. If the Bills are to turn the corner and get better as the bye week ends and they get back into the regular season, what will give them the biggest boost? What will have the greatest impact on them coming out of the bye? Is it more offensive production? All of us believe that it has to happen. Is it a more favorable schedule? Is it continuing to take the ball away? They've done a great job in takeaways the last couple of games. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. You can vote on our Twitter poll or weigh in on Twitter. A couple of tweets that Bills Bro tweets in. How can anyone vote for anything other than offensive production? We're holding teams to less than 20. Just need to score. Simple enough. Yeah, it is simple, but as Chris says, it is also tied into the schedule and
who you're playing, the
defenses that they're going to face in the next couple of weeks. Demir Yakupovich tweets in, should have never traded Sammy. We would be 5-0. Do you believe that? I don't.
You're putting a lot of eggs in one basket there. The run game's been the biggest problem here.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody focuses on the quarterback, and I understand why. But I think in large part, Bills fans know what Tyrod is. He's not a 300-yard-a-game passer. He's not even a 250-yard-a-game passer in many cases. If he's somewhere between 225 and 250, that's pretty darn good production from Tyrod Taylor. In a passing game, that's a compliment to what drives this offense, which is the running attack. And the rushing attack is what's been missing from this offense from a production standpoint more than anything else. The running game over the last 2 years usually rolls up somewhere between 140 and 160 yards a game. And that's been sorely lacking for the last month. So that's what has to change. If they have a running game comparable to what they've had the last 2 years, then I think you're more likely to be 5-1, not because Sammy Watkins isn't here.
A couple of other tweets. Lead the Stampede tweets in. The schedule is favorable if they can continue to play strong defense and take advantage of takeaways, but what they need is better offensive production. Yes, yes, yes. We all see that. We all agree with that. Alec Dembski tweets in, continual positive smart coaching, stronger run game to ease some pressure off of Tyrod Taylor, find some other offensive weapons. Agree with all of that. And Bruce Engelhardt tweets in, I always look forward to Chris Brown being on the show. He had so much knowledge about the Bills and football in general.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. Check is in the mail.
Bruce Engelhardt, a big Chris Brown fan.
Okay.
What do you think? 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. What will give the Bills the biggest boost coming out of the bye? Let's go to Ernie in East Aurora. Hello, Ernie. Welcome.
Hey, guys. I'd like both your opinion on before game 10, if the Bills are realistically out of a playoff spot, would you cut to Cost, Holmes, and Ryan Davis to get a number 3 compensation pick? Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, Ernie.
A lot's been made of this.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I think, you know, realistically out of a playoff spot, okay, I mean, what does that mean? Does that, you know, after
Well, that
game
means
10,
you know it before week 10, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to know.
Does that
I mean,
mean
look,
2-8? Does that mean 4-6? I don't know if anything will be decided.
I realize a lot can change. We're only going into week 7 here, but you're less than a month away from week 10. And what do you have? 24 teams in the NFL with 2 or more losses? I mean, that's a jumble.
Yeah.
And sure, there could be some separation in the next 3 weeks, but to the degree that you would know for certain you're out of a playoff race, I don't think so.
No.
So to me, and I know there's been a lot of talk about this, and you know there's been talk about building for the future, and I get all that, and they have 2 picks in the first round, 2 in the second round. I think they might have 2 in the third already.
Yeah.
So to add a third round pick prematurely, you know, submarining your 2017 season, and I know there's going to be arguments on both sides. You're not submarining it by getting rid of, you know, Dukas or Holmes and Ryan Davis or whoever else you want to throw in there that was in part of that early free agent pool. But I really think you're putting the cart before the horse to make that decision. I don't. If it's a first round pick, I think it's a different conversation. Mm-hmm. A third round pick, I think. I don't know that that's a definitive call that you can firmly come down on based on – because here's the other thing. Who's getting hurt? What if John Miller suffers a 1 month injury? Now what are you doing? Are you doing putting Dukas in there? Ryan Groy?
Two of those three have been starters, Andre
right.
Holmes and Vlad Dukas.
And Holmes is at a position that's deficient right now in terms of bodies.
You want to get thinner at wide receiver? I mean, again, we're projecting out, 3-4 weeks. Ryan Davis has been an important part of their defensive line rotation and has
right.
made some plays. I get building for the future, but I don't think 10, as you said, what is 10 after 10 weeks is what? Only five more games, right? So after.
It's week 10 of the season.
10.
We're already
it's
in week
do it
7.
By week 10. You're right. So four more games.
Yeah.
So you really want to pull the plug on a season with guys who are contributing, at least marginal contributors, to get an extra third rounder?
Well,
I would not. I would not.
And I think this team would have to go into a complete tailspin to definitively say, you know, out of the playoff race. I don't think they're going to be able to make that determination
right.
in 3 weeks' time to say we have to make this roster move, and this roster move to, you know, afford ourselves a compensatory pick in the third round, you know, for 2018. There's too many variables there for
right.
me to feel comfortable making that kind of a decision.
Heard that before. Didn't expect it to come up in today's context, not what we're talking about, but thanks for the call. Joe in Rochester. Hello, Joe. Welcome. You're on the show with us.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Okay.
Kind of a crazy concept, but I watch game after game, and it seems like Tyrod only cares about not throwing that interception or giving up a fumble. He needs to get permission from the coach to allow him to be able to throw an interception once in a while. You watch Brady play, and Brady throws into coverage, and he allows the receivers to come get the ball. He creates windows, and Tyrod won't throw unless the window's wide open, and it drives me crazy to watch game after game him hold on to the ball, even take a sack and not throw the ball.
Yeah, but once again, Joe, you're comparing apples and oranges. You're comparing Tom Brady and Tyrod Taylor. They're not the same quarterback, and I think to even try to compare them is foolish. You're not making a fair comparison. Tyrod Taylor will never be Tom Brady. Never.
I'm trying not to try to make the comparison. What I'm saying is once in a while he's got to throw into some coverage.
Once in a while. Okay.
Does.
All right. That's fair.
And, Joe, I do think it's not accurate to say he needs permission. I believe he does have permission to take more chances than he does and to try to fit the ball into tight windows more than he does. I know under the previous coaching regime they had, we sat on this set last year and talked to David Lee about it, how they're trying to coach him through, you know, the process of putting the ball, forcing the ball into coverage, taking that risk. I'd be shocked if this current coaching staff didn't talk to him about that as well. It's something that I believe is ingrained in him. It's a good thing to avoid turnovers, to avoid interceptions. But I do think that he sometimes limits the throws he can make by being overly cautious. And
yeah,
I think that's what you speak to, Joe.
Yeah, if that's what Joe's talking about, that's an absolutely fair argument. You want to talk about once in a while or – you know, giving your receivers a chance to make a play. I'm on board with that, Joe.
Yes.
He just came out of the box talking Tom Brady, and I'm like,
right.
whoa, we got two different quarterbacks here that we're talking about, and one is in the upper stratosphere of football history, and the other guy is, you know, a slightly above average quarterback. So I think what you have here is a situation where, yes, you want to see him take more chances with the football. You certainly don't want him to be reckless, but I don't think anyone's ever going to accuse Tyrod Taylor of being a reckless quarterback with the football ever at any point in his career.
Thanks, Joe. You know, I watched a little bit of Baltimore the other day and watched Joe Flacco, who's got a great, big, strong arm, take too many chances, force the ball into coverage sometimes. I think that hurts the Baltimore Ravens. Joe Flacco's supreme confidence in his arm and his ability to fit the ball into tight coverage, he can do better. He has done better. When they had their Super Bowl run, he went half a season almost without throwing an
right.
interception. But he, I think, is at the other extreme, a quarterback whose eagerness to take chances hurts his team.
And
at
I think
that right now it is.
Right, and I think part of why Tyrod, and you know, you can make this argument that he's been this way his whole career. I don't know if there's a lot of starting game evidence to prove that before he got here, but what Tyrod had to go along with him on offense was an enormously productive run game. So the need to take chances was lessened in 2015 and in 2016. And let's not forget, as conservative as he was, this team was still ranked 12th and 10th in points per game each of the last 2 years. So I think he comes in almost with a preconceived mindset. And I'm not going to pretend that I know what Tyrod is thinking, but it wouldn't surprise me if he comes into games with a preconceived mindset that the running game is going to be there. I don't need to do too much here. Now, things have obviously shifted. The run game has been anemic for the last month. And now comes the time where, as the quarterback, you do have to recognize I'm going to have to do a little bit more here to kind of stem the tide until we get the run game right. And if I'm in a game situation, time and score, how the flow of the game is going, how productive the run game is, I may have to take more of those chances that Joe was talking about. And I think that is what is infuriating to Bills fans. The run game's not working. Step up and take a few more chances, and we'll live with it if we have another a couple of extra turnovers.
Yeah, and I'm on board with that.
So am I.
You don't want the extreme, but I'm on board with that. Jim calling from Tonawanda. Hello, Jim. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Morning. I think the key to everything is Glenn's injury. It's killing us. I mean, we don't have the depth on the offensive line as we have on the defensive line. That's obvious. And unless Glenn gets healthy, we can't run the football.
Right.
Miller hasn't played very well. The other tackle is not that good. The rookie's just starting to be a player. I mean, if an ankle injury is big trouble. So if Miller, if Glenn can't come back, we're in a world of trouble because we can't run the football. If we can't run the football, we're just going to be stuck. It's a tragedy because the wild card, birth and the division birth are up for grabs.
Yeah.
Here right now.
Jim, I got to say, I hear what you're saying, and clearly running the football is job one, but I don't know that I don't think the coaching staff views Cordy Glenn is critical in that right now. And by the way, the depth at offensive line just got a little better with Chantrell Henderson being added to the roster yesterday. And keep an eye on the tackle position. I don't know where they're going to go now with Cordy Glenn, who was on the game day roster at Cincinnati a couple Sundays ago.
Right.
And yet Deion Dawkins played. So that might tell you a little bit about his health, but maybe even more so about where they view his fit and how he what his future is on this offensive line. There's that. Now Chantrell Henderson added to the mix. I'd keep an eye on the tackles here, and I don't know that Cordy Glenn is the keystone, as Jim kind of indicates there.
Well, yesterday at practice, he was the first guy out there at left tackle, when they jumped into teamwork. And I think there's a concerted effort now to get him into game shape. I mean, this is a guy, and you say, well, what are you talking about? We're going into week 7. What do you mean he's not in game shape? You think about the time missed, and there's a cumulative effect there for players, especially big men that have to play 60, 70 plays a game. There's a cumulative effect when you've been off the field and you haven't been playing games week in and week out. You haven't been going through a full practice week in and week out. And the Cincinnati game was an exercise in taking a step to getting back to full game shape. He was active. He only played on the special teams field goal snaps. And so Dawkins was the guy that got them through the game at left tackle. Deion had a tough day, with Michael Johnson, understandably. The guy's a long 6'7" defensive end. Hard to get your hands on him. But I would be surprised if, in their assessment of the first 5 games and seeing where Cordy Glenn is at now, which is probably as healthy as he's been maybe since before training camp or before his ankle procedure last offseason, that this might be the route they want to take. Let's go with the veteran, get him into as best game conditioning shape as possible, and get him on the field. Even if it's only for half the game this week, if he comes through this practice week fine, he's a full participant in practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's not going to surprise me if he's your starter on Sunday. Maybe he doesn't play 70 plays, but maybe he plays 40 or 45, and hopefully that's an upgrade. Because I'm telling you, offensive line play, Murph, you can never get away from the fact of time on the job together. And what Richie Incognito and Cordy Glenn have is 32 games on the job together. Mm. That shouldn't just be arbitrarily dismissed. There's chemistry there, whether it's a new scheme, an old scheme, whatever you're talking about. I think it's at least worth a look here. I really think his absence from the lineup has gone under the radar, and I think it has had an impact, pass protection and run game. So I'd welcome seeing him back in the lineup. Maybe he won't be back to his full self. Maybe there will be a little rust. But you got to try something different here. And when you have a 7-year veteran or a 5-6-year veteran sitting there that you paid big money for with a new contract, I think you put him back in the lineup and hope for the best.
We'll see. Like I said, keep an eye on the tackles.
I'd like to put him back in the lineup.
Dino in Niagara Falls. Hi, Dino.
Hey. Hi, Chris. Hi, John. I noticed that the last 2 years our rushing attack has been number one. This year they're stacking the box on us. What worries me is Tyrod's a great quarterback. He needs to take more chances downfield, and Zay Jones has to definitely improve on what's going on. I think he's lost confidence from the Carolina game when he missed the pass. He's missed a few drop balls. And I think we can do playing very well. We're very well coached. And this is a year that we could possibly make the playoffs. And I'll hang up and listen, guys. Thank you.
Okay, Dino, thank you. Yeah, we see what's going on around the AFC. Everybody does. We see what it might take to get in the playoffs. And we see what the issues are with the offense. I agree with you. You need to stretch the field to get the running game going. But I think the bulk of the issue with the running game comes with the offensive line and the running backs, Chris. And I really think, I hope that that's been the focus for this bye week in terms of corrections and what they've talked about. Maybe a slight change in approach a little bit in the run game as far as going back to what that offensive line appeared to be more comfortable with the last couple of years. I would hope that's where the most improvement will come. I would, in answer to our Twitter poll, I would hope that is the thing that is going to change the most coming out of the bye week.
Yeah, and I think Dino's point is valid. They have seen a lot of eight-man boxes, but that's no different from what they've seen each of the past 2 years. Any offensive lineman that's been here the last 2 years, Eric Wood, Richie Incognito, Jordan Mills, John Miller, they'll all tell you, we've seen a host of eight-man boxes each of the last 2 years. We've been able to still be effective enough against it. Perfect case in point, the Thursday night game down against the Jets a couple of years ago. The Jets came into that game with the number one run defense, and they were loading the box like anybody's business, and they still got enough in the ground game. I think they had just over 100 yards against the number one run defense facing an eight-man box, partly because of Shady, but partly because, you know, their line's pretty good. And they did enough to win that football game. I think it was 22-17. So, you know, to just arbitrarily say they're facing a lot of eight-man boxes, so that's why they got to stretch the field, I don't disagree with that. But this is a team that's wholly familiar with coming up with answers against eight-man boxes and still being effective. They've got to get back to that.
Chris, we appreciate you coming in here and helping to get the show started. You're kind
of
like,
the bell ring? Is Donald here?
Donald is here.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like those relief pitchers who just came in and get a couple of batters and then you're gone.
I was just getting loose, too. I just broke a sweat. So.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Donald Jones standing by. He'll be in studio with us, and we're going to talk with Bills rookie linebacker Tanner Vallejo about a variety of topics when we come back. We're just getting started. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Football is really all I know, and my whole life has revolved around football. I could work on a game plan all week. Coaches are putting in the hours to put you in the right position. It's almost like you're a piece to the puzzle, and you just have to fit your piece. You got your teammates relying on you to do your job. So when you come back the next day and you watch the film and you see everyone doing their job and ultimately you get a win, it's a great feeling. Football is amazing, but the thing I get most out of it that I like the most about it is I get to play for my little brother, Hunter.
Beyond the blue and red, a special video feature that is up right now on BuffaloBills.com and on the Bills Twitter page. And the focus is our guest who is here in studio with us, Bills rookie linebacker Tanner Vallejo, Buffalo's draft pick this past year, the sixth-round pick from Boise State. Tanner, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Donald, welcome to your show.
Thank you. Good to be here today.
Good to have you here. Tanner, the piece which I watched this morning is pretty incredible. It tells your story of you and your brother, younger brother, Hunter, who is, what, 6, 7 years younger than you? 5 or 6 years younger than you?
About 5.5 years.
Tell us the story in your words about the bond that you have and why it is that you consider the fact that you play for your younger brother.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a cancer survivor, brain cancer survivor. So at a young age, I had to see him in the hospital. You know, just seeing all those tubes and all the radiation, chemotherapy, stuff like that, just, you know, it really implanted in my head that that I wanted to play for him. And at a young age, you know, he wanted to play. He still wants to play football. But the doctor never, every time he'd ask him, told him that he couldn't play. I remember going to a doctor's appointment with him one time, and he asked if he could be a punter, even just be a punter. And the doctor said, no contact sports. So, you know, I know it's tough on him not being able to play, especially with my two older brothers that played. So I just feel like I'm playing with him on my back.
Your brother Hunter, as you said, 5.5 years younger than you, was diagnosed with brain cancer when he was 6 months old and
yes.
6 months to live?
Yeah, around 6 months, 6 months old and 6 months to live. So that was tough. You know, my parents didn't tell me that because I was still young too.
Yeah.
But just having one parent around all the time or living with other people just because they were always in the hospital with them, that was tough.
And here he is 5 years later, and as they said in the piece, I think it was your mom who said in the piece, you know, he'll never be considered cancer-free, but still, 5-6 years later, he's doing okay, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 15 years.
Yeah. It was about like 5 years after when the cancer went into remission, so he was about 5 years old. But, yeah, the cancer's in remission, so, I mean, it's pretty much gone, but they'll never say he's cancer-free just because there's always a chance that it can come back. But, yeah, like you see right there, it's just tough seeing him in the hospital like that. But if you see him now, the only thing that you would notice that's different about him is just the scars on his body.
I was just about to ask you, what's he like now? What does he do every day?
He's normal. He's like a normal kid. Obviously, he has a couple of things that just take him a little longer to get. I mean, he's missing a quarter of his brain that they took out. But other than that, if you met him, you'd think that he's just nothing like that even went on in his life. He's real big into weightlifting, which is cool because, you know, I go home and I have a weightlifting partner. Mm-hmm. Actually, right now for a senior project that they have to do for high school, he's building like a gym, which is pretty cool.
Now, because his older brother plays in the NFL, does he use that in high school? Like, hey, man, my big bro is that dude. That means I'm that dude.
I don't think he uses it too much. But, you know, he hears a lot, like, about our games and stuff. Like, the kids in high school follow me, and, you know, they got, like, a little picture of me up in the weight room, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, the kids – and it was relatively recent. I was there, 2013. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're with Bills linebacker Tanner Vallejo, the rookie draft pick from Boise State, a video piece that's up on our website and on the Bills Twitter page about his relationship with his younger brother, Hunter, a brain cancer survivor. And all of this because this is a crucial catch week this week in the NFL and here in Buffalo, part of a number of events that are going on all over Western New York and going on, of course, this Sunday when the Bills host Tampa Bay. And your brother, Donald asked how he's doing now. There's documented in the video. Your brother and your parents were here for the Denver game a couple of weeks ago, huh? And it looked like you had a good time.
Yeah, they had a good time. It was their first time. I think my little brother's first time to New York, maybe my parents too, so that was cool. You know, just being able to bring them across the country and have them see, experience a game out here, which, you know, people are always telling you how crazy it is. They got to experience it firsthand, so that's cool.
You and your brother, and you have two other brothers, right, up in your home in Northern California.
Yeah, my two older brothers, Zach and Cody.
And in the video piece, you describe Hunter, your brother Hunter, as the toughest person you've ever been around.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him even tear up or anything, which is pretty crazy with the things that went on in his life. I've seen him, you know, play baseball and get his knee split wide open, and he's asking if he could go back in the game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it just puts into perspective that, you know, what we go through on a daily basis, someone always has it worse, and just seeing how tough he is makes me want to be tougher.
What does it mean when you say you play for him? How does that manifest itself on game day?
I think the last person that always texts me before the game is him, and it's usually just something simple, like, let's go, something simple, but ever since high school, ever since I started playing, I knew that he wasn't going to be able to play. So I feel like every time I'm out there, I try to have him in the back of my mind. You know, obviously you can't think too much during the game, but every time I make a play, it's for him.
Now, you say every time you make a play, it's for him. Do you have, like, something that you do to symbolize that?
Not really. You know, I call him after the game, stuff like that. But during the game, I'm kind of locked in. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he knows that I'm playing for him.
What was it like at the Denver game? Obviously a big Buffalo victory, and there's video in the piece of you and your family kind of hugging after the game. But to meet up with your brother, especially your brother, but your entire family after that game, their first game that they've seen you, what can you tell us what that Sunday night was like?
I think the coolest part was, you know, my little brother, I don't know if he'd ever been to an NFL game, and then also being on the NFL, the actual field, mm-hmm. was a cool experience for him. Then we went out, we got some good food at Mulberry's, got the wings, and he said that was the best wings that he's ever had, so he had the whole Buffalo experience.
Yeah, that's a great story. It is up on our website, Beyond the Blue and Red, Hunter Tanner, Hunter Vallejo, Tanner's brother, younger brother, a survivor of brain cancer, still going strong, part of the NFL's crucial catch week. Today, by the way, the Bills kind of focusing on pediatric cancer. Later today, children from Stone's Buddies and the Punt Foundation will meet with Bills players right here at the AdPro Sports Training Center for a family fun night. You got the? Are you going to be around for that?
Yeah, I'm coming for that. Yeah.
I mean, that's meaningful for you, pediatric cancer.
Yeah, it hits right at home. And, you know, just being in the hospital, and one of the things that sticks in my head from I was young too, but is you'd see other children and they're fighting for cancer, and then one day you'd come in and they'd be gone, and I mean you pretty much knew what happened to them, which just it's just hard. It never stops. Kids are always going through it.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, the coming up Sunday when the Bills host Tampa Bay, they're going to join together the players for a crucial catch against cancer. The Bills welcoming more than 50 survivors of all forms of cancer onto the turf. They'll be honored for their battles. The first 50,000 fans in the stadium Sunday will get special edition Bills ECMC Yowies. You know what those are? Those little, I think you tie them in your hair or something, right? Those pink things.
Is that what a Yowie is?
I believe they are.
I've never heard of Yowie.
Yeah, I believe that's what it is. They've had them
before. Is it a Buffalo thing?
No. It's a national thing. And a special Snapchat filter, you can publicly declare your support for the fight against cancer. This all times out pretty well, right? I mean, it's pretty cool that you're here to tell your story during the crucial catch week this week. It's gone on around the NFL for a week or two, but now it comes here home to Buffalo. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think the biggest thing I got out of it is just seeing my little brother. He's never been put under a spotlight like that and just be able to go through interviews.
Right.
He sees me go through them, but just to be able to, you know, have him go through that experience was cool.
Dealing with that with your brother, have you gotten involved even back home with, you know, pediatric cancer or cancer in general?
Not so much back home. I want to get something going, and you know, I'm starting to go to the hospitals, visit kids. You know, if you could just put a smile on these kids' face, they're going through some of the toughest times in their lives, and even their family, make their family feel happy, then you did something good.
Yeah. The entire story, Beyond the Blue and Red, detailing Tanner Vallejo and his relationship with his brother Hunter, is at BuffaloBills.com and at on Twitter, on the Bills Twitter site. Speaking of your family and your brothers, we're all aware of what's going on in Northern California for the last week and a half or so. Hunter and your mom had to evacuate your home in Penn Valley, California. I looked it up. It's like, what, an hour outside Sacramento maybe?
Yeah, it's about right in between Sacramento and Lake Tahoe.
In Lake Tahoe?
Yeah.
With the wildfires.
Yeah.
How threatened was your house out there, your family home?
From what I heard, it was real close. It just the fire didn't make it over the ridge. If it would have made it over this ridge, our house would have been one of the first to burn down. But the winds changed at night. Obviously, winds are a big factor with fires. But there's still that homes that burn and people that lost everything. So my thoughts really go out to them.
And go ahead now.
What about the smoke? Are they affected by the smoke? I know they had to evacuate. The fire didn't affect the house, you know, firsthand. But are they affected by the smoke out there?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's affected by the smoke. It's hard. I've been out there when fires are hundreds of miles away and the smoke makes it there. You know, it just makes it hard to breathe. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is just like with the high school and sports, they gotta stop all the outside activities.
But your family is at work out there. Your dad and two older brothers are all firefighters out in California, right?
Yeah, they are. My dad works with an inmate hand crew, and then my older brother Zach, he works up in Lake Tahoe. My other older brother Cody, he works down in San Diego.
All three of them fighting the wildfires, because I know it was north and south.
Yeah, I haven't really talked to them because they've just been so busy. They work at 24 on, 24 off. So I think Cody's down in Southern California fighting fires down there because the whole state's pretty much burning. Mm-hmm. And then my dad and my other older brother are up in Northern California.
What a helpless feeling for those homeowners, your family for a little bit, but anybody. What can you do?
Really just grab all your belongings that you want and that you don't want to burn if your house catches fire and get out of there.
How fast, if a fire is, let's just say, 50 miles away from you, how fast would it then get to? If the wind is strong enough, how fast would it get to?
It could get there quick because, I mean, there's embers flying in there, and those things don't cool down for a while. Mm-hmm. I've had fires near my house before where they weren't too close, but you have ash falling on your house. So, I mean, all it takes is one of those things to light up something dry on the ground.
You got all this going on, and you're on an NFL football team for the last 6 weeks or so. Is your head spinning with, you know, the wildfires out west and obviously concern for your brother?
I mean, it was kind of good timing just with the bye week and everything that it happened now. But, I mean, we're back in the house. The fire that fire's put out. But, Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of just – I think I read something over 5,000 houses were burned. So that's people's everything just gone. So it's tough just reading that stuff, but just try to find ways to help, really.
You know, when you're here, I found myself, as I was dealing with different things that I dealt with back home while I was playing, I found this as an outlet, football, being on the football field, being in meetings. I didn't have to think about what was going on back home. Do you find it the same?
Yeah, I think one of the most peaceful things is when you're out on the field and just I mean, my mind's not on anything but football, so I use that as an outlet, just like you said. Mm-hmm.
How have these first five games gone for you? What do you think of the NFL so far?
You know, it's a lot faster, obviously. It's the best people in the world playing football. But I think I'm getting better every game, and that's really the goal, just get better every game and help us win.
Most of your work has been on special teams so far.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that? Did you do a lot of that in college?
I did a little bit in college. It's a little bit of a change for me, but, you know, I'm willing to do anything, you know, to help this team win. And, you know, I'm just learning more and more about special teams every week.
Coming out of this bye week, have you gotten to the point now, as a rookie, you really haven't had a break yet. Have you gotten to a point where you're starting to feel it in your body and you still got a long way to go?
Yeah, I mean, I've dealt with a few things just through training camp and the start of the season. So I kind of got that behind me. I'm feeling good right now and just hoping to stay healthy.
Tanner, thanks for coming by, sharing your story. Stories, you've got more than one going on. And if anybody's interested, the video piece is really good. You've seen it, right?
Yeah, I've seen it.
What your parents think of it? And what
they loved it. There's a little piece on there. My dad gets a little choked up. I don't think I've ever seen him choked up, so that was the first time.
It's up on our website at buffalobills.com and on the Bills Twitter page. Tanner Vallejo, his relationship with his brother Hunter, and how he plays for him. You said you play for him on a regular basis. That's cool. So check that out. Tanner, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Bills linebacker Tanner Vallejo, the sixth-round pick from Boise State. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. Our thanks again to Tanner Vallejo for joining us. What a great, interesting story. Highly recommend the video piece and the stuff about his family out there fighting the California wildfires. Oh, by the way, he's got to play NFL football. I mean,
that's a lot. You know, everybody, a lot there. This is why I always talk about when I say players, it's so much bigger than just football for these players, you know, and fans come to the games and you pay attention to what's going on, who's hurt, who's not hurt, who's playing this week, all of that stuff. The players individually have lives back home, that they have family back home. They have wives, they have children, they have things like he's dealing with his brother, and then the wildfires. There's so much. Every player has a story, you know, and most of the time their stories are interesting.
He mentioned to us off the air that his family's coming back for the Oakland game in a couple of weeks, not this week's game. Obviously, they got issues out there with the wildfires. Donald, somebody tweeted in a picture for you of the Yowie towel, a twist on the rally towel. The Yowie is described as a multi-purpose fabric wrap. Much more than a rally towel, just twist it and wear it in dozens of different ways, including a bandana, a wristband, a headband, a scarf, a face mask, a skull cap, a hairband, a scrunchie.
I might have to get one.
Yeah, you'd look good. Would you wear it on the air?
I would wear it. You know what, Murph? I was thinking about, so I'm letting you know this, if one day I come in dressed up as in a costume because Halloween is coming up.
Uh-huh. What are you going to do? You're going to wear a costume?
Yeah, okay. I got a good one too.
Let me know that. I'm going to have furniture delivered to my house that day.
I got
and I won't be here.
I got a good costume for you guys.
Oh, yeah. Good luck.
I am ready for this one.
By the way, Andy Major is going to join us later this week, Thursday, I believe. The Bills.
Is he wearing a costume?
No, but he'll bring in a Yowie thing in.
All right.
So he can show you.
Let's see if he can bring an extra one. I like one of them. I've seen one of these, and I said the first time I saw it, I'm like, man, I would like one of those things. You can use it in so many different ways.
I don't know how to tell you this, Donald, but I think it's primarily for women.
I don't care.
Oh, okay.
It's no shame. Listen.
I'm not shaming.
It's all about style, baby. It's all about style and how you make it. You know what? You got to get some swag, you know, and you put that's swag sauce right there.
Okay.
I remember when I was playing, right? All right, so this story about Stevie. Stevie was wearing this lotion, Balenciaga lotion, right? And I'm like, man, that lotion smells good. And I remember his cousin, YB, and Kelvin, I can't remember his name, a linebacker. But anyway, so we're all like, man, where you get this lotion? Yeah, Kelvin Shepherd. They're like, where you get this lotion from? And he's like, oh, I got it from Nordstrom's. So we're like, all right. So all of us go to Nordstrom's to get this lotion, right? And we're there, and we're asking the people, do you have Balenciaga? We're in the men's section. Do you have Balenciaga lotion? And they're like, no. And we're like, but you sure you don't have it? And they're like, no. So we call Stevie's wife, Brittany. And we're like, hey, where Stevie get that lotion from? And she's like, well, she was like, that's my lotion. So we're like, so it's only woman's? And she was like, yeah, that's a woman's lotion.
Oh boy!
So we had to ask them, can you give us the women's Balenciaga lotion? We all got it.
Oh man, do you still have it?
I still do have some. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Very comfortable in your skin.
You got to be comfortable in your skin.
Yeah. All right, well, that'll wrap up the first hour of the show. We're going to do a reset and get Steve Tasker in here at 1 o'clock, Lorenzo Alexander at 1:30 to talk about all the community initiatives that Bills players are out there doing today. So a lot more to come, a couple hours to come. Stick around. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at 1 Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from 1 Bills Drive. Players Day off, but many players are going to be busy nonetheless. The players getting out in the Buffalo community starting today after a statement released yesterday by Lorenzo Alexander on behalf of his teammates, going out to serve Buffalo's young people in five different community relations events today. Alexander says some players used the anthem protest to start the conversation. Now they're ready to follow up with more concrete action. Bills return to practice tomorrow to get ready for their first game after the bye at home against Tampa Bay on Sunday. Meantime, in New York City, before league owners meet in New York today, the union leaders and owners are gathering with about a dozen players to try to find a way to move on from the anthem protest. No report yet on what they have decided. Bills made a roster move late yesterday. Chantrell Henderson, offensive tackle, back on the active roster after he completed his five-game league-imposed suspension. To make room, the Bills released cornerback Greg Maven. And with the sprained joint in his throwing shoulder, Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Jameis Winston won't be doing much more than handing off in practice tomorrow when the Bucs return to practice. That, according to Bucs head coach Dirk Cutter. He says Ryan Fitzpatrick will get all the first-team reps in practice Wednesday. Winston will take another day to rest his throwing arm. Giants cornerback Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie has been reinstated by the team after being suspended for 1 week for violating team rules. He missed Sunday night's win over the Denver Broncos. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers will have surgery on his broken right collarbone in the near future, according to Mike McCarthy. McCarthy says Rodgers' season is potentially over. Buffalo Sabres out west take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights for the first time ever tonight. 10 o'clock faceoff. The Sabres 14-2-1 all-time in their first game against teams that joined the league via expansion. And Major League Baseball, the 5 o'clock game today with the Houston Astros and the New York Yankees in New York. Houston leads that series 2-1. Sonny Gray gets the start for the Yankees. Lance McCullers Jr. for the Houston Astros. Later tonight, 8 o'clock, it's the Cubs and the Dodgers game 3. The Dodgers lead that series 2-0. And that's the update from 1 Bills Drive. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones is here and joining us in studio for his regular Tuesday visit from the NFL on CBS. Bills Wall of Famer, former Bills special teamer, Steve Tasker. Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys. Coming in. Thanks for having me back.
Did you get a chance to talk to, I don't know if you saw Tanner Vallejo on your way in.
I did not. I missed him.
He's
missed
a special him. Teamer guy like you, you know, sixth-round pick getting into the league.
He's better than me now, that's for sure.
Wow. But I was thinking, I hope those two get a chance to meet, because when I said Steve Tasker coming up, you could see the recognition in his eyes like, oh, Steve Tasker.
He's barely old enough to
No, you have a reputation, man.
Well, he's in this building. I mean, my name is on the wall. So
your name and picture in the airport. What are you talking about?
That's exactly. That's right.
Picture is in the airport.
He's looking for a car.
I've seen that guy. Doing.
That's why he lit up.
You're not on the post office walls either, are you? Are you also on the post
not
office?
Not lately.
Steve Tasker's joining
what
us.
What does that mean?
You know, the most wanted, that sort of thing.
That was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. Steve Tasker in studio with us for the next few minutes to talk about the Bills, the bye week, the NFL. And you've got a game coming up, Indy and Jacksonville. You're going to work for the
NFL Jacksonville and Indianapolis this
at
weekend.
At Indianapolis.
Yeah.
That's a weird division down there, isn't it? The AFC.
It really is.
On display
yeah.
last night, too. Just
it
out,
really is.
Now, they're just not good teams. Now, I know we're in Buffalo at 3-2, but they just. Who's the best team in the AFC South? And when you identify that, the next question is, who cares?
Yeah.
Because they're not going
right,
anywhere.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I when it first started, I thought, you know, Houston was going to be a team to beat. I think Jacksonville has really surprised some people. I mean, and, you know, I'll tell you. Jacksonville is a little bit of a team built a little bit like Buffalo. Their quarterback does just enough. They got a great defense, good running game. Leonard Fournette's the real deal. I told you this earlier. We might have been talking after week one when I saw him play Houston. Leonard Fournette is maybe, I think, is
right now. I don't know what his numbers are with anybody else, but he might be offensive rookie of the year in the NFL. He's that good.
And what about Indy? Any thoughts on them?
Well, they're trying to get it done with Jacoby Brissett. I think what's going to happen is there was one of the drives I saw even this last Monday night where they had him running the read option. And so he's a real good athlete, but he's also got a big arm. And they're using that to do some misdirection. They had a little, even their first touchdown was a little option read where the guy came across to kick out, and instead of kicking out, he kept going, and he just hit him with the pass, and he snuck into the end zone. There's a lot of misdirection things Indianapolis can do with Jacoby Brissett. And I was telling Steve Berline, my partner in the booth, I think that Colts are going to use him up, man. They'll let him run it, do it, because he's not their franchise. I mean, they can kind of throw caution to the wind with Andrew Luck a couple of weeks or maybe even just a week away.
I was just
away.
About to say, how far out is he?
We don't know yet. Don't know yet.
I think people say he may never come back this year. He might not come back.
Yeah, if that's the case, you can wipe this season off the books. And it may be that's what saved Chuck Pagano's job. I mean, the fact that he didn't have his guy there if they don't go or don't win enough games.
What did he have surgery on? I mean, I know it was a shoulder, but what did he have?
I think it was a labrum or rotator cuff. I think it's one of those. It was a serious. I don't think it was an AC.
Okay.
It was.
Gotcha.
It was one of those surgeries you got to repair. Mm-hmm.
Steve Tasker is in studio with us. The phone line's open. Maybe you want to weigh in on our Twitter poll. The Twitter poll deals with the Bills coming out of the bye, and I guess the immediate aftermath of the bye. What's the biggest boost the Bills might be able to get coming out of the bye? What do you think? Our Twitter poll, more than two-thirds of you say more offensive production. That's what they need. 22% say the schedule opens up, much more favorable schedule moving forward. 5% say more defensive takeaways. 5% say something else. Give us a call if you'd like to talk about it with me or Donald or Steve, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What do you think, Steve?
I'd say one of the others. I think the thing that I see is health. Obviously, they're losing Charles Clay, but you're getting E.J. Gaines healthy. You're getting looks like Jordan Matthews might be coming back a little earlier than they thought he was. I think Ramon Humber, getting him back in the lineup. I also like the fact that Shontrell Henderson's back in the lineup, and Cordy Glenn's going to be maybe back and healthy. You get all those guys back, that's a big boost. The one guy that really hurts him is Charles Clay. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that they're getting healthy – now is a huge boost, particularly up in the offensive line. You get two starting tackles dropped in to your lineup at this point of the season. That's a huge boost, particularly for a team that's been struggling at right guard, can't make a decision between Vlad Dukas and John Miller. So I think that's a huge boost for them, and I think that in and of itself will give the run game a little bit of a boost, which is going to be exponentially helpful to getting the passing game going as well.
I was talking to Sean McDermott about this yesterday. He is viewing it as, they're getting healthier, but now there's a second wave of injuries, and he's speaking primarily of Charles Clay. That's a major loss for an offense that has struggled to squeeze out any points or any production this year.
Yeah, but I think with the offensive linemen getting healthy, your run game's going to spark up a little bit, you would think. Now, there's no question the teams are absolutely daring the Bills to throw the football. They don't believe they can do it, and the Bills they're 3-2, and the two games they lost weren't big losses. I mean, they're a tough team to beat. So teams are really forcing them to run the football and prove they want to stick with the run. And their defense is playing good enough that, hey – they're going into the fourth quarter with a lead. I mean, they did it in Cincinnati. This is a team that is surprising some people. So their run game's going to be viable. They're going to keep running it because they're going to have a lot of opportunities to run it because their defense is going to keep it close. They don't have to abandon it.
Right.
And I think that's been a big boost for them. But nevertheless, as we all know, they've got to find a way to throw the football effectively.
We've talked about this the last couple of days, I think even last week, on the next four teams that they play, or at least three out of the next four teams, and the defense is against the run, and how, I don't want to say bad they are, but for lack of a better term, how bad they are against the run.
Well, I told you guys last week when I was here, I think the Bills are going to beat just about any team they play with a bad defense.
Yeah.
They played the top three defenses in the league, Cincinnati, Carolina, and Denver. Mm-hmm. They're top three teams in the league, and they've and then they played Atlanta as a top 10 defense. Yeah. So they played some pretty stout defenses, and they played them very tough.
And I mean, the Jets defense is not bad against the run either, and they have a good defensive front. So they played some tough defenses. With everything we just said, they played some tough defenses. The next four teams, or three out of the next four teams that they play, they should be able to get the run going. Hopefully, they can get the pass going as well. But The biggest question is, who's going to be the guy to step up? If you don't have Charles Clay, Jordan Matthews sounds like he's going to be back maybe sooner than we expected, but you don't have him right now. So who's going to be that guy who steps up? Is it Zay Jones? Is it a Nick O'Leary? Is it Logan yeah. Thomas? Like, who's going to be that guy who steps up for them?
Yeah, I think O'Leary and Logan Thomas are the guys you kind of have to look for to replace a Charles Clay. Mm-hmm. I know O'Leary's very sure-handed. You see him catch the ball really well. Now, he's not the threat once he gets his hands on it that Charles Clay is, but he's a guy who does get open, get some separation, and he's a guy that moves the chains. Mm-hmm. That's what this team wants. Big plays are great, but they got to stay on the field offensively. Right. The more they do that, the better their chances are of winning, even if they don't score points or, you know, particularly with Steven Hauschka, who's, you know, hitting these 50-yard field goals mm-hmm. as routine as anything. So it makes them efficient offensively, keeps them on the football field. It gives their defense a rest, even in a dominating performance like the defense has given us a couple of games this year. They're always solid. So the more help you can give them, the better you're going to be. So I'm with you. I think O'Leary and Logan Thomas, I think it's a place for Logan Thomas
to emerge.
To make, a move in his career. This is exactly the kind of opportunity he needs, and mm-hmm. I think he should exploit it if he can.
You know, we did this exercise last week, and the rankings have changed a little bit, but it's worth revisiting. The last four Bills opponents defense, Cincinnati, second-best defense in the NFL. Atlanta, the 10th-best defense in the NFL. Denver, the best defense, first in the NFL. And prior to that, Carolina, the fourth. So you got three of the top four defenses and the 10th best defense. And the next four opponents for the Buffalo Bills, really not that formidable. Tampa Bay, 30th in defense in the NFL. Oakland, 23rd in the NFL. The New York Jets, 25th in the NFL. The Saints, 26th. So you've got four of the bottom eight defenses in the NFL coming up as opposed to the previous four.
You've got
that should make a difference.
You got to win those games.
Yeah.
I don't care. You know, now the Saints are you got to score 40 points to beat those guys. I don't think they're going to score 52 like they did this last week. But by the same token, I think it was against who was it? I can't believe the Saints really lit them up.
Was it Detroit?
Yes, it was. It was Detroit. Mm-hmm. They're not going to score 52 on the Bills defense.
Right.
But nevertheless, these are four games where you think this is where your offense is finally going to be able to stay on the field, make some plays, and score some points and give their defense some help. And like I said, I think this team's built to play teams like that.
Coach McDermott has been on the show. And Steve, you play, you understand it. You guys were in the playoffs in the Super Bowls. You have to win your games at home, and three out of the next four games are at home. And the Jets game is on the road, but that's a divisional opponent, another game that you want to win, Thursday night game. So you're talking about three out of the next four at home, you have to win your games at home.
Yeah, I agree. This is a critical stretch. This is a critical stretch. Mm-hmm. It could set you up to, you know, sprinting to the finish.
Exactly.
And other teams hoping you lose mm-hmm. instead of the Bills being in that situation like they've been in. But there's no question at the end of these next 4 weeks, I think it's going to be thumbs up, thumbs down kind of thing.
Steve Tasker joins us in studio. The line's open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Steve, when you look at the standings, the AFC standings, and it's been said a couple of times on this show the last few days, the AFC is wide open. It is wide open. And yet, you know, New England squeaks out a victory. Pittsburgh goes to Kansas City, gets a big victory. If there's going to be – I wonder if we're beginning to see the separation between the haves and the have-nots in the AFC based on those two scores I just mentioned. You know, the cream rising to the top.
Yeah, no doubt. Listen, Pittsburgh going into Kansas City, it was a big game. That was a big win for them. And I think that was them finding themselves. There's no question that Le'Veon Bell is now back to full strength after – just getting in late, into training camp. There's no question they're exactly the team you thought they were last year. New England, listen, all those people around the league who were looking sideways at New England when they got their heads caved in on opening night by Kansas City, they were like, oh, hey, it's starting to show. You know, we here in Buffalo knew better. Mm-hmm. New England's going to be there at the end, and Buffalo's going to have two games against them that are going to be absolutely critical to their success as the season goes. And if
December, too.
Yeah, that's right. And
meaningful games.
Yeah, and they're meaningful games. I think there's no doubt New England is going to be right there at the end for the division title, and the Buffalo Bills may have the chance to be the team that decides that they're not going to get it this year, that the Bills are going to take it.
You know, we talk about the next four games, but you can add the fifth one, the November 19th game with the Chargers.
Yeah.
That's another game. I don't care if it's on the road. You're probably going to have more Bills fans in that stadium than Chargers fans. You need to win that game, and that will take you into that true back stretch of the season, which is Kansas City, the two New England games, the two Miami games. You need to win the next five games, you know, or at least four out of the next five games. That makes those games, the New England games and the Miami games in December, true meaningful games where you have an opportunity to win the division.
Do we concede, and it's history in here too, Steve and Donald, do we concede those top three spots in the AFC to the Patriots, the Steelers, and the Chiefs? I mean, do you think that's the way
Well, the Chiefs is legitimate. Say, you know what, you're going to have to rubber stamp them. Somehow, some way, they're either going to win that the West or they're going to be the wild card. Mm-hmm. You don't go 5-0 and wilt like that, particularly in a game they lost this last weekend where they had a chance to win against the Pittsburgh Steelers and all. Man, that was not a letdown game for them. Mm-hmm. It was a tough, hard-fought game. They just got beat. Mm-hmm. They got beat by a good team that played well. They have not – there's no swoon in the Chiefs. They're going to be there at the end. And we've already talked about New England Patriots. Nobody like the AFC East teams, the Dolphins, the Jets, mm-hmm. the Bills, know how good the Patriots are going to be at the end of the year. The Steelers. Listen, they showed it. They're going to get better. They've got that vibe going again. And I think this is – they're kind of – I think the Steelers are the ones who are the most fragile in that trio. They're a little bit of a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And see, I think and we talked about this last week. I think Cincinnati has something to say in that division as well.
Cincinnati's better than Pittsburgh. I don't care what Pittsburgh
looks
like.
Because their defense is so good.
Cincinnati's better than Pittsburgh right now. They're playing more consistently. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Ben had a five turnover game against Jacksonville. I mean, they looked horrible. So that's a little, you know, you can't play like that and then just say that ain't going to happen again or say that we're better. You know what I mean? You got to. There's something there that, mm-hmm. that caused them to go into the tank like that against a team that they thought they were going to beat. And so I would say Pittsburgh are those three, New England, Kansas City, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's the one that's the most fragile.
Right. You know, those two divisions are interesting. You look at the West, you still had Denver. You know, Kansas City still has to play Denver. Oakland, I don't know what we're getting out of Oakland right now. That I just don't know. With Derek Carr in there, I think they're a much better team. Obviously, they are a much better team. But they're having issues with so many drops with those receivers out there. I mean, they just can't get it together for some reason. But I think when they play Kansas City, it's going to be hard-fought games. The same thing with Denver and Kansas City. You know, it's going to be hard-fought games. So I think Kansas City will end up winning that division. But I think it's going to be something we're going to be talking about at the end of the year, who's going to win that division. Because those two teams are going to give Kansas City a run for it.
Yeah, hey, Steve, there's – and I think it's understandable, and I kind of like it among Bills fans, sort of a – reserved optimism. They like what they've seen so far. Many people think, well, they've done this to me before, and I don't want to start thinking about playoffs yet.
Right.
But I like the way Bills fans are approaching this season to date, for the most part, most Bills fans, because most people are thinking, okay, this is a good start. The conference seems to be opened up a little bit. Let's see how this plays out. I think that's probably the smart way to look at the rest of the schedule.
I think it's right to – It's crazy talk about playoffs and getting it. It's mm-hmm. a lot. There's so much football to be played. 11 games left. You know, mm-hmm. There's so much that can happen. It's a little bit early for that. But I'll tell you this. At the beginning of the year, I told you what my thought was about this team. It's going to be a team that's going to be easy to root for. You're going to see some things in there that make you proud of this team. And we've seen. And I think for me, it happened way earlier than I thought it would. Yeah. I thought it would take them, you know, six or eight games to get to the point where they're like, okay, now I'm kind of seeing mm-hmm. We saw it from week one. I mean, they look sharp. They look well coached. They don't make mistakes. They're not giving anything to their opponents ever. Mm-hmm. They're hanging in with some of the best teams, particularly defenses in the league. They are tough to beat, and I think that's been one of the things where people are. You know, it's an easy team to cheer for now. It's an easy team to get behind because you know that you know when you walk off the field, even if they lose, they're going to put together a really good effort and something that the fans and their fan base can be really proud of.
I'd say this. In the years past, teams come into Buffalo thinking about, you know what, all right, that's a game that we can win. This year, I would think that teams are when they see Buffalo on their schedule, they're like, I really don't want to play that team, mm-hmm. you know, because their defense is so good. So even if we end up winning that game, it's going to be a hard-fought game. We might have some injuries. some big hits, things like that. I don't want to play that team, even if we end up winning that game.
Hey, Steve, and you also said when the season began or preseason how you expected this year's Bills team to get better, to be better at the end than they were at the beginning. Do you still feel that way? Do you see that?
Yeah.
I mean, the injuries play into that.
Right. Now, that's the thing that's the big question mark. Are they going to be able to stay healthy enough to get there? Because I don't know that their depth has been proven to be all that good, although their offensive line has gotten some valuable experience with Cordy Glenn out of the lineup and Chantrell Henderson being suspended. They've got, you know, Deion Dawkins playing a lot. And on the other side, and I
Jordan Mills?
Jordan Mills. I mean, they've got their – moving guys around. The guard has been something. The only two guys that have played, Eric Wood and Richie Incognito, are the only two guys that are really solid in there. And I think when, you know, that depth has really probably gotten a boost now, at least in that position group.
Right.
But when you get out to the, you know, we go back to what we were just talking about at the beginning. You know, Charles Clay hurts me. We're going to see if Nick O'Leary and Logan Thomas can do it. And outside, we knew the receivers were all brand new, and now you know Jordan Matthews is out for a while, and Kalen Clay. None of us knew who Kalen Clay was a month ago. You know, so I think all that, while these guys are still going to come in, they're still well coached and stuff. I don't know that they're the top flight players, and with the experience, that are going to carry a team, you know, deep into the you know, season where we're going to get better and better and better and better and better.
It's hard to say if the team has gotten better because. Especially when you look at the offensive line, you can kind of speak out of both sides of your mouth there because it's like, okay, when you think in terms of depth, you have a guy like Deion Dawkins who is now subbed in. We still have Ryan Groy, you know, who hasn't played this year. But when you're subbing so many guys in and out, how can you get better as an offensive line, especially when you're running a zone scheme, because you don't have those guys working collectively every single week, you know? So you have that side of it, but then you have the side of it where it's like, well, at least we know we have some guys that can step in and play.
Right.
You know, so you're kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth. And you can look at this entire team like that because you have so many injuries and guys subbing in and out. So at least your guys who are not your day one starters are getting quality playing time. You know, so at least later in the season, if somebody goes down, you know this guy can step in and make some plays for you.
I think the thing about it is you talk about improvement means – your team starts to make plays and do things that you haven't seen them do before.
Mm-hmm.
That, and this is a new team, so we're kind of everything they do now is kind of new, so they do seem pretty good. But I think now, you know, if you want to see them take steps forward, they got to do things we haven't seen them do. Start throwing the football down the field, start getting the run game going a little better, getting some more sacks, more pressure on the passer, that kind of thing. Now, the defense has been playing well, but to see improvement, I think market improvement, that's what you got to see. See them do things they haven't done before in a positive way.
I think this is why this stretch right now, these next four games, is so crucial to the season because you're going to go through these four games with some guys, key guys like Charles Clay, who are banged up. But if you can win three out of the next four games, especially the games at home, and you should win the one down in New York as well, if you can win three out of the next four games, you get your guys healthy again into that back half of the season, that crucial stretch. You know, that's what teams that go into the playoffs, they get healthy right at the right time. There's some luck involved in that. You know, you get healthy right at the right time, and then you have meaningful games, and you go into the playoffs healthy. I think this team is in a position where they have injuries, but they don't have season-ending injuries right now.
And there are some critical injuries around the league, Steve.
I mean,
some big names.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers goes away, and J.J. Watt goes away.
Odell
Beckham goes away. Those are stars, and no question about it, and they make a big difference for their clubs. But
you know, three of the NFL's top five.
I was just about to say, do you think that hurts the league?
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's short term, certainly. Long term, probably not, but short term, certainly. I mean, you could see J.J. Watt kind of going that way. I mean, he's a guy that's plays that high motor kind of style, and he trains hard, and you know, you can't hold up under that.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta know to pick your spots, and he's 1,000 miles an hour every time, and plus he's a huge guy, and you know, guys like that tend to have problems like that. So but Odell Beckham, that's just bad luck. You know, that's just a tough tackle on a bad play, and you know, that stinks. And you know what, the more times you throw at a guy, the more opportunity there are for that kind of stuff to happen, and all that. Aaron Rodgers, hey man, it's a quarterback. And
you have a problem with a hit?
No, it was a good hit.
Who were we talking to, Andrew Brandt yesterday, where he said he wouldn't be surprised? Was that Andrew Brandt?
Yeah, we had him yesterday.
I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, listen, he was outside the pocket, throwing it. The guy took a step. you know, was there room for the guy to let up? But he did everything he did was well within the rules. And it looked like non-consequential.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron, you know, as a smart guy does, he rolled over, so he took his shoulder away from the ground, mm-hmm.
and it still happened.
I was shocked when he came up with a broken collarbone. Yeah. Shocked.
Yeah. You know, this is the thing with Aaron Rodgers. We talked earlier in the year about, I think we did one of our segments, and Aaron Rodgers was the focal point of it, and we were talking about, can he play into his 40s?
Yeah.
And I don't think he can because of his style of play, because he likes to play outside the pocket. He takes big hits like he does, you know. Tom Brady doesn't take those hits, but because of his style of play and what they ask him to do in that offense, or what he has to do because their offensive line isn't that good, he takes those hits and he gets hurt.
Yeah, it's always a risk. I mean, Cam Newton, you can notice mm-hmm. he's changed his style of play subtly, yeah. Where he doesn't, you know, he doesn't do the kind of things he did when mm-hmm. he first came in, and he's had to evolve. Now he's worked hard at it too. He's a much better player from the pocket than he was when he first came out, and he's always been able to make all the throws, mm-hmm. but now he's much more judicious in the amount of punishment he asks for, and I think it's going to serve him well long term.
Minute or two left with Steve Tasker from the NFL on CBS. Albert in Buffalo joins us on the line. Go ahead, Albert. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. I think he's got to look around a little more. He's not looking around too much.
Who?
Our quarterback. He's not looking around.
Yeah, you think Tyrod needs to scan the field a little more?
He's not looking around enough, and he's having a hard time, I think, looking over our offensive line, let alone the defensive line. He's not looking around enough. I'm watching on TV enough, and I see more guys open, and he just ain't looking around enough.
Easy to spot guys open on TV, but he makes a good point. Tyrod, he's a little late on throw sometimes.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's more than anything. I think he certainly sees it. I think the thing that Tyrod, and we've talked about this off the air as well as on. Tyrod seems to be one of those quarterbacks that waits until the guy's open, until he's sure of it before he throws it. He doesn't like to throw it unless he sees it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't anticipate it real well. And that's why you'll see him hitting a lot of routes, either when the receiver's behind the defense to going away from it, or the deep posts or the corners. And that's why he's good at the deep ball, because those guys are coming open. He'll throw it down there. And also the other throws that he makes are when guys are running hook routes, mm-hmm. where they turn around and all you got to mm-hmm. do is drill in on them. He doesn't throw those crossing routes and the intermediate stuff where they're coming across a zone and you have to find that window, right. and you got to throw it early. That's right. what he doesn't like that throw. So, you know, and I think that's, you know, the coaches realize that, and that's one of the things that you got to be ready to accept with Tyrod. And I still don't think that's any reason to – you know, to think that they're not going to be able to win games with him. Yeah. I think because he does have a strong arm, he's accurate, plenty accurate enough, and his athleticism always gets you more than one or two first downs a game. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of ways, he's very effective playing exactly the way he's playing.
You know, and I get it, and we all pick apart Tyrod's game. You know, you did the game, Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. The touchdown throw to Brandon Tate.
That was nice.
That was a great throw.
That was a great throw.
Anticipation throw. Put it right where he had to. Sailed it over the defensive back. Tate made a great catch. I mean, like I said, we can identify the bad throws by Tyrod, but you have to acknowledge that every once in a while, he'll make a really nice throw.
That was a nice throw. And that's why I think he was really good 3 years ago throwing the deep ball, better than anybody in the league. And that was because they had some guys that, you know, mm-hmm. the running game was so good. It was kind of the first year the Bills led the league in rushing, mm-hmm. so people were, you know, leaving guys open in the back end, and they took advantage of it. Now those windows are starting to close as teams are starting to try and get at both ends of the defense, mm-hmm. and it's those deep throws aren't there as open as they were.
Steve, it's great to have you here, and it's off to Indianapolis for you and your crew, right? Berline and Tom McCarthy this Sunday for the Jaguars and the Colts.
That's right.
We'll see you back here next week. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks for having
me. Steve Tasker, Bills, former Bills special teamer. He's on the Wall of Fame here, and he works for the NFL on CBS. Happy to have him here on Tuesdays with us. It is the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you live from One Bills Drive, and our thanks again to Steve Tasker for joining us to give us insight about what's going on around the league. Going on around the league today in New York City, NFL owners met this morning with players from about a dozen players, actually, from several teams, and now the owners are meeting, scheduled to meet starting at 1 o'clock today, discussing the anthem protests. Here in Buffalo, there is a kind of a proactive approach to moving forward from the anthem protests. And live on the Subway First Take Hotline with us, a good friend of the show. We'll have him here Friday to talk some football. But we want to talk to Lorenzo Alexander today about the Bills Community Outreach, which is going on today. Five different community organizations being serviced late today and tonight by Buffalo Bills players. Lorenzo, it's John Murphy and Donald. Thanks for being with us. And tell me about the genesis of this. Where did this idea come from? Hello, Lorenzo. Yeah, Lorenzo, are you there? Can you hear us?
Hey, yeah, I can hear you guys kind of go in and out.
Okay. You got that Boost Mobile.
Wow. No, I'm AT&T certified over here.
Oh, all right, my bad.
Out of this, tell us about what's going on today, Lorenzo, and where this idea came from for the Bills players today.
It really was birthed out of the kneeling and the protest that has occurred throughout the NFL and on our team as well, having an opportunity to meet with our ownership, front office, the team, the coaching staff as well, and just having an open discussion and just figuring out a way how we can create real change going past the protest and obviously bringing awareness.
I think we lost
today.
Him.
And, yeah.
Keep losing Lorenzo Alexander. Are you there, Lorenzo?
I am here.
Okay, your phone's cutting out or our phone's cutting out. You talked about...
Moving forward... and just trying to figure out a positive way to do it. And obviously, it's a holistic approach. It's one right way to do it. But just taking advantage of our platform as Buffalo Bills and try together to go out together today as a team and really serve the community. And out of this, not just make it a feel-good one-day moment when we do it, but some guys that may not have a foundation or have partnered or been in the community as much, maybe they partner with us and continue the relationship, because it's going to take more than just one day to change our community as far as applying to the youth. And then on top of that, you know, obviously with some of our influence and ideas as players and organization, meeting with leadership in the Buffalo community and how to figure out how we can change some things from a legislative standpoint, an institutional standpoint as well, to fix the issues, you know, and come full circle on it.
We're with Lorenzo Alexander. Five different locations today: the Bell Center in Buffalo, Northwest Buffalo Community Center, Mad Urban Hope Center, Crucial Catch, an event right here at the Fieldhouse, Police Athletic League tonight. How many players do you think you have going out to all these various places, Lorenzo?
The majority of the team signed up.
Wow.
I couldn't give you an exact number, but I would say probably somewhere between 30 to 40 guys will be out there because it is important to us that that we serve today and make right. this a team function. So it should be fun. Be a good time.
How did guys, you know, did each guy kind of sign up for where they wanted to go? How'd that kind of work out?
Yeah, that's kind of what we left it up to guys. That's why there's like a plethora of opportunities to serve today and the different ways to go about doing it, whether it's the Powell League or the tutoring program or the Crucial Catch tonight. Guys, you know, have certain passions on their hearts and feel comfortable in certain environments. So everybody had an opportunity to kind of sign up. And then our community relations team did a great job of kind of divvying everybody up. And so we can attack this full force as a team and together and have a great time today.
Lorenzo, this makes so much sense. I mean, the anthem protests were one thing, both here and around the NFL. But this really is the next logical step, isn't it? It's fine to draw attention to issues, to protest
right.
issues, to get attention. But well, this is really concrete, boots on the ground, making a difference type stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, and it is. You know, I think a lot of guys or some of the guys on the team have been doing things already in the community. You think of a guy like Michael Tolbert or Jordan Matthews and other guys as well who've already been impacting their communities. This is just a way we can do it as an organization. I think when you do things together, it carries so much more weight to it. So we still want to keep the conversation going, but we also want to serve and be diligent in the process of actually creating change and not just talking about it all the time, but doing things that will actually lead to it as well. And that's continue to do what we've been doing in the community. The Buffalo Bills have done a great job with that. And then also, like I said earlier, just talking to the leadership
people that make policy and implement things from top down in our communities, whether it's the school system, the police force, you know, whatever it may be, so that we can hit these things at all angles and really create positive change in our communities.
Hey, Lorenzo, how do you get, you know, you said majority of the team signed up for today, but how do you get majority of the team to continue to get out in the, into the community, you know, and not get back wrapped up into just football and making sure that I'm good on the football field while I'm here for the season? How do you keep this going for the entire season and even in the off season?
Yeah, well, you know, I think, like I said, the Buffalo Bills have done a great job and having opportunities. Even before this came about, when I got here last year, as far as having guys be able to get out into the community and have an opportunity. But that was just kind of like, you know, a player here, a player there. And guys are going to do things based on how they feel. So a young guy, like, for example, Zay Jones, he may not feel comfortable, you know, overextending himself versus a guy like myself who's been in the league, understands, who has a process and understands how to do things. I can maybe do a little bit more than he does. And I think every guy has to figure out what that looks like for themselves and then serve accordingly. And then hopefully in the off season when your schedule frees up, then you can maybe dig in a little deeper and get a handle on things. So when the next time the season comes around, you're kind of already entrenched. You know what your role is as far as serving the community, and you already kind of have a good grip under your belt as far as playing your first or second year in the NFL.
Lorenzo Alexander on the line with us talking about the Bills community outreach going on today. As he said, several dozen players out there. You, your statement yesterday, Lorenzo, I got there was a lot of interesting things there, including how you talked about the national anthem protests was not about our military nor our allegiance and appreciation for our country's principles and privileges. Somehow that got lost over the last month or so. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, and that's what the, you know, the attention went towards, and I understand people who have people that serve in the military that are serving or who have served, you know, people are going to have different perspectives on a thing. But if you go back to how it started, Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid getting together with a Green Beret and discussing the best way, and they thought it was more symbolic of a half-raised flag. You know, obviously we love our country. We appreciate everything that's going on in it as far as what we've been able to do in it. But at the same time, in some of the communities that we were raised in and come from, there are a lot of issues that are going on, and it's both sides. I understand about having accountability for yourself and action. But there's also been some things that have been strategically implemented and done in our country to hurt certain communities. And it just is what it is. And you can try to argue it up and down. But if you're going to be real, let's be real and be open and honest. And let's have a conversation and try to figure out how to get things corrected. And, you know, obviously it's a hard issue because, you know, you're dealing with people, broken people, where none of us are perfect. But when you have conversations and have an open mind entering them, you can start understanding other people's perspectives and come to an agreement in a loving place, an understanding place. And that's how we really create change. And that's what all this is really all about.
Hey, Lorenzo, while you guys are out in the community of Buffalo, there are about a dozen or so players and a dozen or more owners down in New York City meeting today, trying to get together and talk about, you know, these things that we're talking about today. Have you had a chance to speak to any of those players who are down there right now?
No, I have not. We had a conversation maybe a couple of weeks ago, you know, from a PA perspective with some guys around the league and just trying to figure out what, you know, different ideas of how we can be impactful in our own community, things that we can do that are proactive, kind of like we're doing here in Buffalo, and just trying to come up with a way where we can move forward and not lose sight of the real issues. So, you know, guys will continue to talk, and I'm pretty sure I know a couple of guys that are meeting. Eric Reid is one of the gentlemen I'm a good friend with, and I'll probably get on a call with him later or tomorrow at some point and just kind of see what was discussed and where his mind is at as far as moving forward as well, just to kind of get his perspective on things.
What do you hope comes out of the owners' meetings in New York today, Lorenzo, on this issue?
I don't really know what I hope to come out of it. It'll be great just to see some initiatives, you know, obviously moving forward. Anytime you have the power of the NFL backing, you know, a cause and the NFL players kind of working together on some things, It allows change to happen a lot quicker. I also understand it's a business, so trying to figure out a way, you know, where everything can coincide together and we can, you know, move forward in our communities and change some of these things that are really, you know, disappointing, you know, as far as our culture and stuff that are going on in a lot of these communities day to day.
Well, a good first step today here in Buffalo with you and your teammates getting out there. Five different locations starting late this afternoon right up until tonight for Bills players and their community outreach. It's unprecedented, Lorenzo. I know a lot of guys do stuff in the community on their days off on Tuesday, but this organized and this, I mean, just in terms of sheer numbers of players, I've never seen anything like it as long as I've been around here.
Yeah, and that's a testament, you know, to the guys on this team, their heart, and really wanting to serve and be productive. And then our community relations department, from Gretchen to Preston to Megan to Jasmine, that whole department does a great job of putting things together. They did this really quickly. And really just hearing what guys had to say and made things happen. And, you know, obviously that starts with our ownership as well. So they're behind us, and none of this could really have happened without their support and hard work that they do behind the scenes that nobody ever really sees. So thank you to those guys.
Thank you, Lorenzo, for joining us here today for a couple of minutes to talk about it. We'll see you for the lowdown on Friday. We'll talk about the Bucks and the Bills Friday, right?
Yes, sir. Sounds good. I can't wait to get after Donald a little bit.
He needs it.
Well, before you come get at me, you fix that Boost Mobile.
Thanks. All right, Lorenzo Alexander, Bills captain, Bills linebacker, kind of spearheading this community outreach by the Buffalo Bills. What do you say, 35, 40 players all over the place today, five different locations throughout Buffalo and Western New York. Lorenzo joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Donald and I are back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones live from One Bills Drive. Our thanks to Lorenzo Alexander. We had a pretty packed show here with more to come. Trey Wingo coming up after the top of the hour. We've already had Chris Brown in studio, Tanner Vallejo, Steve Tasker, Lorenzo Alexander, Trey Wingo coming up. Donald Jones has made a special guest appearance today. It's been a good show.
Nice little cameo.
Yeah, just drop in. Mm-hmm. Donald just drops in. I just saw this on Twitter, Pro Football Hall of Fame account. Hall of Famer Ralph Wilson Jr., born on this date in 1980, founder and owner of the Bills, one of the founding owners of the American Football League, October 7th, 1918. Mr. Wilson was born on this date. That is a significant historical milestone. Now, he was owner when you were here.
Mm-hmm.
He was in advanced age by then. Did you have much contact with Ralph Wilson when you were playing here?
I just said hi to him, you know. He came in my first year. They brought him in. Well, he came in during training camp. And then my second year, I don't remember if he came in. But I remember my first year and me as an undrafted rookie, like, oh, man, that's the owner. And thinking, like, he's a billionaire. Or at least close to being a billionaire. I don't know if he was or not, but man, that dude has a lot of money, you know. It was weird.
So
coming
you looked
in.
At Mr. Wilson and saw dollar signs?
Part of it, yeah.
Okay.
That was part of it. You know, like, man, that dude is, you know, he has some money in the bank.
Much more than that, by the way.
He was a lot more than that. And that's understandable, but you know, when you come in from where I come from and you come in undrafted, those are one of the things you think about.
So not a whole lot of interaction, though.
Oh, no.
Which is why you just saw the dollar signs, bro.
I walked past him and just said, hi, how you doing? And that was it.
Okay. Well, he was born on this date in 1918, Ralph Wilson, according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. A couple of calls. Let's go to Jamar on the east side. Hello, Jamar. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, how are you guys doing, Donald?
Okay. Good.
Good. Good. A long-time listener. Great show. I'm just trying to kind of piggyback off of what Lorenzo was talking about. And I think it's great that the owners is, you know, trying to figure out something on this flag protest, which I don't think is an anthem protest. But my question is for Donald. When you did arrive in Buffalo, what was your interaction with the city, with the community? I know they have rookie tours, which, from my understanding, not too many of them, we don't see that effect on the east side. So
right.
I'm kind of wondering, like, what is the kind of schedule or how do the Bills kind of tell you guys about the community or the east side?
So for me, when I first got here, you know, I was fortunate enough to have Naaman Roosevelt here with me, Naaman being from the city of Buffalo. And so Naaman actually scheduled different events and appearances for himself for himself, me, and Marcus Easley. We would go down into the city and do different speaking engagements and things like that. I'm not sure what, you know, how many players actually went down into the city. There are always like Play 60 events and different things like that. Most of those weren't down in the city. And I think with the new ownership and with the new management and these players, I think they are truly trying to get down into the city so that everybody is affected, those inner city types of communities that might not always see the players.
Yeah.
You know?
Players got to want to do it, right? And players have a lot on their plate, especially the young players, it seems to me. You know,
it's not easy as a young player. It's really not, because you're just trying to figure out everything that's going on in the NFL. You know, you're in the league now, and there's all of these different things happening in the league. You have suspensions happening, you know, players taking stuff to court. You're like, there's so much that goes on. You're trying to figure out what you're doing here. You're trying to make sure that your assignments are always good. You know where you're supposed to be. Do we have a meeting tomorrow? I would call Stevie all the time. Hey, man, we got a meeting tomorrow? You know, and he's like, I don't know. Do we have a meeting?
No.
Like, Steve, you're the vet here. I'm trying to get some information from you. So you're just trying to figure out where you are, you know, every day. And you have different, you know, guys who are first rounders, those guys have, you know, different endorsements and things that they have to do. There's a lot that you have to deal with. Oh, by the way, your family's hitting you up for tickets. Your family's hitting you up for money. I mean, there's so many different things. You're trying to figure out, when can I get a massage? When can I get some acupuncture? You see all of the vets trying to take care of their body. You want to do the same thing. I remember I talked to Tre'Davious a couple weeks ago. He's like, yeah, man, I got to get a couple things done on my house. And you're a rookie. You're just out of college. And, you've now bought a house. You're trying to figure out what to do to this house that you bought. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. It's not easy for rookies to really get out into the community and be active. They do as much as they can do. The veterans kind of understand everything. They've kind of settled into what they're doing. They have their families. They have their homes. So they have a lot more time. I don't want to say they have a lot more time, because – you know, they all have the same amount of time. They just know how to manage their time a lot better and get down there.
From New York, this announcement came out just a couple of minutes ago from the league, the NFL, and the NFL Players Association as a result of the morning meeting they had in New York City. And I'll just read it to you from the NFL and the NFL Players Association. Today, owners and players had a productive meeting focused on how we can work together to promote positive social change and address inequality in our communities. NFL executives and owners join NFLPA executives and player leaders to review and discuss plans to utilize our platform to promote equality and effectuate positive change. We agreed that these are common issues and pledged to meet again to continue this work together. As we said last week, the statement goes on, everyone who is part of our NFL community has a tremendous respect for our country, our flag, our anthem, and our military. In the best American tradition, we are coming together to find common ground and commit to the hard work required for positive change. That announcement from the league and from the Players Association, as you might expect, it essentially says, we met, we talked, we're going to meet some more, which is, you know, good. Dialogue,
right? But just keep that dialogue open.
Yeah.
You know, keep the dialogue open. Don't have this separation. And that dialogue will be great for, obviously, for the community, which is what we're talking about right now. And they need to keep that dialogue open because, you know, everything up in the NFL office, the owners, they need to have that dialogue with the players about what's going on in the communities, especially the communities where a lot of these players come from, you know, and these players feel a certain way about these communities. So it's a good thing to have that, but it also helps out on the business side of things, which, you know, there's a CBA coming up in the next couple of years. They need to keep that dialogue and that relationship on good terms as they want to negotiate, as they get closer to, you know, the time to negotiate for that new CBA.
And, you know, I thought about that, and I meant to ask Andrew Brandt about that yesterday, but what if, as a result of today's meeting with the Players Association and players and the owners, what if it led to just better lines of communication?
Yeah.
So maybe you don't have to have the stare down leading up to the end of the CBA.
And it's not good for anybody to just have a stare down right before, oh, we have to get into these negotiations.
Both sides are rolling in money, you know.
Right.
And the money, by all accounts, will probably continue for the foreseeable future. There's no reason to have that much, you know, acrimony and not have lines of communication open. Maybe this will lead to that.
You've been covering the league for a while. Have you ever seen the league come together with the players like this and meet on different
I can't recall.
Issues?
No, I can't. This is unprecedented, you know. Mm-hmm. This is unprecedented. The meeting today about the anthem protests and about where they go from here. We'll see how it plays out. You know, there's always the wild card of some sort of inflammatory comments coming from the White House, maybe some owners. I mean, I thought Jerry Jones stepped out of bounds a little bit last week when he said anybody who who doesn't kneel will not play that game. It sort of threw a match on the fire, which it seems like they're trying to put, you know, that behind them now and move forward. And all you got to do is look at what's going on here in Buffalo today with those five community organizations benefiting from the manpower of Bills players and think maybe that's the path. Maybe that's the way out. Do you agree? You
don't have to agree. I do agree.
Maybe that's they're showing.
I think this is a good start. I think that I hope that teams throughout the NFL all can see something like this. I think they're doing things like this out in Seattle as well, where the organization is getting involved. And I hope that the organizations can get involved with the players, because players have always gone out and done things on their own. But hopefully now the organizations and the NFL itself now understands you have to get into these communities as well, because these communities, they truly do need the help. They, even if it's just motivation, like, wow, that's an NFL player. You know, I never had that coming up. Like, I couldn't imagine even being close to an NFL player, you know, and then you would see another community, you know, another town, two towns over, and it's like every year they have play 60 or something coming, you know, and it's just like a slap in the face to those of us that come from those inner cities.
Well, they do stuff in inner cities.
They do, you know, but they just have to now get in, and I'm not even just talking about play 60. They have to get into these communities a lot more training. Like, they just have to understand and open dialogue with the community and understand the issues that are happening in those communities.
And I think most importantly, the players have to want to do it, have to want to commit the time and resources. Nothing to say the players can't scratch out a big check. Some of them do, I know.
Yeah.
Some of them don't.
Yeah. The players, I think players also have to understand, because players do a lot in their own communities, but they have to understand to do things in other communities as well, outside of their own communities. They have to have open minds as well as a player. Yeah, I come from this, and I understand what it's like here, but I don't know what it's like in this other community that doesn't know what it's like in my community. You know, everybody has to have an open mind, and I think that's what they're trying to do now.
And today they're going to get a chance. A lot of players, as Lorenzo said, 40 players or more are going to look at five different community organizations here in Buffalo. Well, maybe this is the way out. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Trey Wingo, who covers the NFL for ESPN, the host of ESPN's NFL Live, soon to be on ESPN Radio and ESPN TV, with Mike Golic. Golic and Wingo coming up at the end of November. Trey Wingo to look at the Bills, where they stand in the AFC, and what's to come. When we return, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. No practice here for the Bills today, but many players are busy today. Nevertheless, they released a statement, Bills players did, late yesterday, saying they're ready to engage in the community starting today. Going to go out and serve Buffalo young people with five different community relations events. Players say they're hoping they form relationships that continue into the future. Lorenzo Alexander, just on our show moments ago, says the players used the national anthem protest to get the conversation started. Now they're ready to move on with more concrete action. The Bills return to the field tomorrow for practice, getting ready for their first game after the bye at home against Tampa Bay this Sunday. Chantrell Henderson added to the active roster, back on the active roster as of late yesterday after he completes his five-game league-imposed suspension. He is on the 53-man now, and he is a backup offensive lineman to make room. The Bills released cornerback Greg Maven yesterday. With a sprained AC joint in his throwing shoulder, Tampa Bay quarterback Jameis Winston won't be throwing much in practice tomorrow, according to Bucs head coach Dirk Cutter. He says Ryan Fitzpatrick will get all the first-team reps in practice tomorrow for the Bucs. Winston will take another day to rest his throwing arm. Third-string quarterback Ryan Griffin will run the scout team. It sounds like the true test for Winston's availability for the game against the Bills will take place on Thursday. Giants quarterback Dominic Rogers-Cromartie has been reinstated by the team after being suspended last week for violating team rules. He missed Sunday's game against the Denver Broncos. Pro Bowl cornerback met with Giants coach Ben McAdoo early today, expected to be on the field tomorrow when the team returns to practice. Sabres on the ice tonight against the Las Vegas Golden Knights, first time ever. It's a 10 o'clock faceoff at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Baseball tonight, the championship series continue. ALCS Game 4, Astros and Yankees in New York. Houston leads that series 2-1. Sonny Gray gets the start for the Yankees. Later tonight at 8 o'clock, it's the Cubs and the Dodgers. That is Game 3. The Dodgers took the first two games out west. And the 72nd NBA regular season starts tonight with all kinds of changes around the league. First game tonight, Boston heads to Cleveland in one of the marquee matchups.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. And nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome back to the show. Hour 3 of the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our studios at One Bills Drive. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, our regular Tuesday visit with Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live, soon to be co-host of ESPN's Golic and Wingo. Trey, good afternoon. Thanks for being with us here today. We appreciate it.
Oh, how are we, gentlemen? How are we?
We're doing great. We're I think we're looking at a week where all we're going to do is watch the Tampa Bay Buccaneers injury report to see about Jameis Winston. What can you tell us? What do you think? How do you think that's going to play out this week?
Well, you know, it's interesting because he never left the sideline like Aaron Rodgers did as soon as he broke his collarbone, and he stayed in uniform. So, look, I'm not a doctor, but reading the tea leaves, that made you feel like the Bucs didn't think it was going to be as bad as they possibly thought it could have been. So I think that's one thing to consider if you're the Bills, that you probably will see him on Sunday. Now, look, a lot could change between now and then, but the fact that he never left, the fact that he stayed in uniform, I think gives the Bucs fans hope that he's probably going to be out there this Sunday.
Trey, how has Jameis looked this year? I remember watching the game against the Patriots. He didn't look good at all. I haven't really gotten into the film work yet for the rest of the games, but how has he looked this year to you?
You know, he's sort of been up and down. I mean, I think a lot of people felt like this could be a really big year for him. He was clearly overhyped for that Thursday night game against Tom Brady. I mean, he threw for, you know what, 300 yards in that game, as everyone has, by the way, against the Patriots so far this year, which is really remarkable. But he like 90% of him or 80% of him in that game would have been better than 100% of him. He missed DeSean Jackson wide open for a game-breaking touchdown in the second half. He just overthrew him. He's been okay. I mean, is the best way to describe it. But we thought that this was going to be a really big year for him. And so far that has not materialized. I mean, he and DeSean Jackson still aren't on the same page. The running game is gotten better now that Doug Martin's there, but the defense has been a real disappointment for Tampa Bay, and I think that's limited to some of what the offense can try and do. So, it's still early, and I remember a couple years ago he turned it around late and was really good during the second half of the season, but I think it's safe to say that so far in 2017, Jameis has under-delivered.
Hey, Trey, let's take a little bit of a look around the league, and let's start with Aaron Rodgers. Mike McCarthy says surgery is coming in the near future. Not ready to rule him out for the rest of the year. And McCarthy's kind of doubled down on Brett Hundley as his guy. What do you make of that quarterback situation in Green Bay?
It's bad. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, any way you want to slice it, he's one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Some would say he's the best quarterback in the NFL right now. He makes up for a myriad of sins on that Green Bay Packer team, especially with the injuries they've had to running back, especially with all the injuries they've had to their offensive line. You're just not going to win the same way with Brett Hundley. What Aaron Rodgers does so well is that when the machine breaks down, he doesn't break down and is able to make plays outside the structure of the offense. That's the biggest difference. They're going to have to win within the structure of the offense with Brett Hundley. I'm not taking too much away from the three-interception game that he had in Minnesota because, first of all, you're coming in cold. Second of all, that's a game plan designed for Aaron Rodgers' strengths, not what Brett Hundley can do. Mm-hmm. Those things are going to change dramatically going forward, starting this weekend with their home game against the Saints. However, if you're a Packers fan, what you have to realize is, okay, the way Aaron Rodgers was able to make some of those plays, say against the Dallas Cowboys, like on that scramble when he ran outside to pick up a first down right before he threw those two passes in the corner of the end zone, the second one that hit to Devontae Adams for the game winner, those plays aren't going to be there. You're going to have to find a way to work within the structure of the offense, and quite frankly, that's been the problem for the Packers the last couple of years, is that the structure of the offense hasn't been that solid.
Now, Trey, they have arguably, I guess, top 10 receiving core in the league. Some would say top 5 as a whole receiving core. You would think, I mean, with those receivers, the weapons that they have outside, he should, and the tight end that they have, he should be able to make some plays and still get the ball moving.
Yeah, he should. But again, a lot of that is predicated on the offensive line. A lot of it is predicated on how healthy their tackles are, which has been a real issue for the entire season. Look, Brett Hundley can do some nice things, and I think he's going to be okay, but he's certainly not going to be Aaron Rodgers.
That was a curious, I thought, almost overreaction by Mike McCarthy when he was asked about Colin Kaepernick yesterday, and he kind of ruled it out immediately. Is that how strongly he feels about Kaepernick, or is he trying to, you know, bolster Brett Hundley's confidence, do you think?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I think first and foremost, I think they feel confident with Hundley. And at this point, you know, at this point in the season, like, you know, there are people talking about, you're going to go after Romo. The answer there is obviously no.
Right.
There's just no way coming out of the booth at this late date that's even remotely possible.
Right.
And the Kaepernick thing might be interesting, but, you know, the issue for them is, look, these guys have been here. They know our system. You can agree or disagree with that, and that's certainly your right to do that. But I think that their thinking is, look, we have these guys here. We've invested with them. Let's see if they can work.
Predictably, the hit on Rodgers in Green Bay, they view it, you know, as kind of a problematic hit. In Minnesota, Mike Zimmer says no problem at all with Anthony Barr's hit. What do you think from an objective standpoint? What did you think of the hit on Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, we talked about it a lot on NFL Live and NFL Primetime yesterday, and the consensus from all of our guys here was that, look, it's unfortunate, but he was just finishing the play. Now, you could take exception with the idea that he drove him into the ground on his shoulder, and that certainly is something that I think is a valid concern, but I don't think anyone thought it was a dirty hit. Now, obviously, Aaron Rodgers had some choice words. He didn't. He wasn't thrilled with it. But I don't think it was a dirty hit at all. I think the other thing you got to consider about Rodgers, what we've talked about is, you know, how many times have you seen him stop, pump fake, and get that guy, that defender in the air, and suddenly he's on his way going somewhere else. Now, it would not surprise me, guys, in the offseason if the powers that be in the NFL say, hey, we need to take a look at that hit. Because remember, it was in 2008 when the Chiefs safety went low on Tom Brady, and he tore his ACL. The very next year, we had the Brady rule where you couldn't go in low below a quarterback's knee and hit him. So it would not surprise me in any way, shape, or form if they took a look at that and tried to come up with some sort of no driving them into the ground on their throwing shoulder rule.
Man.
I don't know how you could enforce it, but it would not surprise me if that pops up in the
office. The A-Rod rule.
Yeah,
exactly.
You can't even hit the quarterbacks anymore.
Yeah, might as well. We're with Trey Wingo, host of ESPN's NFL Live. Trey, changing topics here. Dolphins with a kind of a shocking comeback win in Atlanta. Some of us here in Buffalo think that sort of takes some of the power out of Buffalo's win in Atlanta a couple weeks ago. What do you make of the Falcons blowing a lead like that?
Well, I think the Falcons have not learned from their mistakes. And we can go back to the Super Bowl, 3rd and 1 with 7:30 left and a 16-point lead. They take a 7-step drop, strip sack, fumble, touchdown, the rest is history. Against Buffalo on that final drive, without their two top receivers, Mohamed Sanu and Julio Jones, 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1. You had to go for it on 4th and 1 because you need a touchdown. And on both of those plays, they ran a 7-step drop instead of giving it to their hammer, Devontae Freeman, to keep that drive going. Go back to the Buffalo game. They're inside the 30, or rather the Miami game. They're inside the 30 with 47 seconds left and two timeouts. They're a field goal down. You have all the time in the world. You have two timeouts. The entire playbook is open to you. And what do you do on first down? Take a 7-step drop and throw it to Austin Hooper, who is in double coverage, and the ball is intercepted. I don't know what it's going to take for the Atlanta Falcons to realize that running the ball is a good thing for them, but eventually I figure they're going to have to figure it out. In that game, Devontae Freeman had 9 carries for 89 yards. It was averaging 7.6 yards per carry, some ridiculous number. Why he only got 9 carries defies logic.
Right. I don't know. I guess they just haven't learned from the Super Bowl yet. You know,
think.
At some point they'll learn here. But what did you see out of Miami in that game, Trey?
Well, I thought the defensive line did a great job in the second half. But I thought that, you know, really, as much as I sit there and love to heap praise on Miami, I think that was more about what the Atlanta Falcons didn't do than what the Dolphins did. Okay. Although I will say in the second half that Dolphins defensive line blew up that offensive line for Atlanta. And there's something to be said about taking advantage. I mean, look, the other thing is they had a short punt. You know, they had a punt that went a punt snap that went back and hit the personal protector. Didn't even get halfway near the punter, and that gave the Dolphins a short field. So the Falcons certainly contributed to that loss in as many ways as they possibly could. However, the Dolphins took advantage of the situation, and they're a scrappy team. They're a very resilient team. Now, the Jay Cutler thing still hasn't paid great dividends, but Jay Ajayi, he had 5 yards a carry, I think. He had 30 carries in that game, so he played very well in that contest.
Hey, Trey, on the bye week Sunday, there were an awful lot of Bills fans who became Jets fans early Sunday afternoon, and a lot of people wondering about the Austin Seferian Jenkins touchdown that was taken off the board by Alberto Riveron and the folks in New York. What did you make of that call and that game?
Look, we went through this and broke it down for about 4 minutes on NFL Primetime, which is probably more time than it deserved. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the replay rule is set up this way. Unless you have irrefutable evidence, the call on the field stands. The call on the field was a touchdown. Now, if they called that an incomplete pass, or not an incomplete, if they called that a fumble, I think that should have stood. But the fact that they called it a touchdown, and then they looked at that replay and found irrefutable evidence to overturn it, is absurd.
Yeah.
I don't care what Al Riveron says. As Adam Schefter said on NFL Live yesterday, I have two sources that said that was a touchdown, my left eye and my right eye. You know, and did he lose possession of the ball? Yes, but the ball never left his body.
Right.
It was sort of in space, then he grabbed it again with his knee down and rolled over the pylon. At worst, that's a first and goal at the one. At best, it's a touchdown. What it isn't is a fumble and a touchback going the other way based on the video evidence and based on the reading of the rule.
And, you know, the video showed the official right there on the call. I mean, he could not have been in better position, and yet they still overturned it. That I don't understand, you know, at some level, I know it's not codified in the rule book or anything, but somebody has to look at that video in New York and say, well, our guy is right there. He thought it was a touchdown. Let's go with that. That's good enough for us, right?
The replay rule says you have to have irrefutable evidence. And there was no irrefutable evidence. That's the thing. At the end of the day, whatever the interpretation of how you want to see it is there's gray area there. I understand that. But the rule says unless you are 100% sure and you can prove it on video, the call on the field stands. And by any measurable standard, that did not happen.
Trey, this far into the season, how do you feel like this new replay rule and everything being decided back up in New York is working out for the NFL?
Well, I think it's speeding up things. I think that's the most important thing. It is taking less time. By the way, I got to give kudos to Major League Baseball. The last team, the last league to get involved with replay, they figured out, and it's done very quickly. And I think that's put the onus on the NFL to get this done. We'll never always agree with the rulings, but at least they come in a more timely fashion. And I think that's the thing that most fans are like, oh, we're going to review this again. It's going to take 5 minutes. That's the best part about this system that's working.
Trey Wingo, ESPN host of NFL Live, on the line with us. A couple of more questions. Adrian Peterson's debut with the Arizona Cardinals was pretty impressive, Trey. I mean, it kind of warmed your heart to see that guy who clearly had no role to play in New Orleans come out with a big game like that.
Hey, old people do well in the desert, you know.
Yeah.
Well, what do you know? They like that dry heat. No, it was impressive. Not only that, but to see Adrian Peterson and Larry Fitzgerald both ball out. I mean, L. Fitz had, 10 catches, 138 yards, a score, and a cover on the onside kick to seal the game. That was pretty impressive. And, you know, it's interesting, when Adrian was in the draft, the Cardinals had a chance to draft him, and they went with offensive lineman Levi Brown. And, boy, can you imagine Larry Fitzgerald and Adrian Peterson together all those years in Arizona, what they might have done.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Murph's actually been talking about moving out to Arizona. There's a fountain of youth out there, Murph.
Come on now, yeah. Absolutely. It's the dry heat.
Yeah. Hey, Marcus Mariota last night did not look anywhere near 100%, but he had enough to beat the Colts, huh?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, that was the first time. That's not an 11-game losing streak Indianapolis had over the Titans. So before last night, the last Titans quarterback to beat the Colts was Matt Hasselbeck, and he's working for us now. So it had been a while. You could clearly tell that he was – there wasn't a read option in their playbook last night. And that was the most impressive thing, that they fell behind, but they stuck with what they are best at, the power running game, and Marcus made enough throws to win. Those hamstring things, man, that's going to have to be monitored all season long. All it's going to take is one sprint, one tweak, and he could be out for another 3 weeks. But they were able to manage it Monday night without it getting any worse, and I think if you're the Titans fan, that's the double win here. Not only do you get the W, but but you also don't hurt your quarterback anymore. So we'll see what happens for them going forward as they play Cleveland next week.
Trey, thanks for this. We'll talk again next week. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live. He's also getting set at the end of November to co-host ESPN's Golic and Wingo. We're looking forward to that. Trey joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Again, our thanks to Trey Wingo for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Good overview of what's going on around the National Football League, and we thank Trey Wingo for that. John Murphy, Donald Jones, what's going on around the Buffalo Bills? Well, players are off today. They'll be back for practice tomorrow, and they get to work on the rest of the season. We want to hear from you on our Twitter poll today. We'd rather hear from you on the phone line, but on Twitter, we're talking about the rest of the season, the immediate aftermath of the bye week. And what do you think the Bills will get out of this bye week? What will be the biggest boost, the most important boost they will get coming out of the bye week? And I guess I'm thinking not so much long-term as short-term. What do you think they get out of being off and having a little bit of extra time to rest, relax, and get to work on their shortcomings? On Twitter, 67%, two-thirds of you say they're going to get more, they should get more offensive production out of coming out of the bye. 23% say there's a favorable schedule coming up. They should be able to take advantage of that. 6% say they should continue to get more defensive takeaways. 4% say something else. What do you think? What can they get out of the bye week coming up? 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
What do you think?
I think it's offense. It's offense. I got to go with that. I mean, they can't continue to sustain any success, 3-2 to this point, playing offense the way they have. And it's running game primarily, yeah. I think. What do you think?
I think I have to go with Steve on this one and other and go health. Because I think for any team, the biggest thing you can get is some rest and get your guys back healthy, you know. And having a week off where guys can kind of chill out and just get in it, physically healthy, mentally healthy. You know, if you're dealing with something, let's get away from this thing for a little while and get back locked into it, you know. And so I think the biggest boost that you can get coming out of a bye week is the health and getting a couple of guys back physically, and then getting other guys just time to get away from it so that they can come back mentally.
But are they
going to
get that? I mean, Charles Clay is out.
You know, you have like injuries, the guys that are out, but you also have other guys that are just banged up, you know, and have been playing banged up. And so you get a week off and you get some time to just rest, you know, and get back to, I don't know if you ever get back to 100% during a season, but get a little bit better than you were.
If Clay were healthy, I would feel much better about getting a health boost out of this bye week. But that's a troublesome injury. That's a meaningful injury for them.
That is. I mean, Clay, even Jordan Matthews. I mean, he seems like he's almost there, but he's not there yet, you know. So you don't have him yet. But I just think, getting that extra time, if you were dealing with the hamstring, is, all right, now I got a couple of days to kind of let this thing chill. You know, if you're dealing with whatever it is, you got a couple of days to just get away from football. You're not running every day. When you're dealing with something, you have to practice on it every day, you know, and then you go into the game. It only gets worse every week, so it kind of just allows it to heal a little bit.
Let's take a call. Jim in Lakeview. Jim, welcome. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hi.
My biggest problem, especially going forward, is the failure of the running game. And, you know, the proffered excuses I've heard, complete nonsense that the players are having are just taking time to gel into the scheme. I mean, to me, that's ridiculous. These are, for the most part, a veteran offensive line. They've been working with this scheme since April. And quite frankly, 2 years ago, Greg Roman came in with a brand-new scheme and a brand-new running back, McCoy, and they hit the ground running, and there was no adaptation. So I think it has nothing to do with them getting used to the scheme, but rather the scheme itself. You look at the Cincinnati game, he all but abandoned the read option. And the read option was the thing that kept defensive ends and outside linebackers honest and kept them from crashing the plays. And abandoning this read option, the threat that Tyrod Taylor poses to a defense, really, really hurts the running game. And the other thing I would point out with the scheme is Rick Dennison's play calling. I mean, last year we were the number one run offense in the NFL, but I can recall several games where we came out and we threw on every down until we scored a touchdown. We came out throwing seven, eight, nine consecutive passes. This never happens with this offense. It's run up the middle. Dennison said the biggest thing they have to do is to avoid negative plays going forward. But if you're attempting to run the ball, especially on the road against a strong defense, and nine guys are crashing, and you've taken away the option, the read option, and the ability to throw the ball, and you're just determined to run into a nine-man front, you're going to have more and more negative plays. He needs to bring back the read option, and he needs to go to a fast pass-first mentality until the defenses loosen up. Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, I just think it's hard to go to a pass-first mentality when you don't have the pass-first personnel. You know, I think it's hard to do that. Now, in terms of the way they are running the ball, if you want to bring back some zone read type of stuff or read option, as you were saying, I'm all for sprinkling some of that in there. I'm totally against getting away from what you have fundamentally done from the beginning of the season. I think that's a recipe for disaster, but I'm all for sprinkling some power into your game, sprinkling some option into your game, because I think that's how you can use Tyrod Taylor's legs. Look, this is, you know, who knows if Tyrod Taylor is going to be here or not next year, but while he's here, you need to use him how he's effective, and that is with his legs and throwing the ball. That's throwing the ball on the run, you know, and when he's effective with his legs, that helps LeSean McCoy be effective as well. When you have Richie pulling around and John Miller or whoever, if it's Vlad pulling around, that's how this offensive line is effective. So I'm all for sprinkling some of that stuff in there, but you can't totally get away from the zone. And this offense does not have the personnel to go pass first.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Donald, and I hear what the caller is saying. I wouldn't want to build my whole offense or lean on read option as the foundation of my offensive success. But – to your point, caller, Jim, and to Donald, yeah, I'd like to see Tyrod run the ball well. It's what he, among the things he does best, and they need to do that, I think. They need to do that a little bit more, sprinkle it in, as Donald says. Rick Dennison met the media yesterday and talked about a variety of topics regarding the Buffalo offense, including Jordan Matthews, possibility that he's back this week, and what and how much that might impact the game plan, whether Matthews is in or out against Tampa Bay.
Well, we just have to wait and see and see how he practices day to day. I mean, we'll game plan and based on you know, what we see Tampa Bay with their defense, and put our players in the right spot. Jordan's a part. Hopefully, that'll be a part. You know, he'll work hard to get out on the field and he'll get a chance to put him in the right spot and make some plays.
Rick, what have you seen from Nick O'Leary specifically? I mean, this guy's been around for a few years now, and he's really been looking, waiting for this opportunity to come. And what did you see of how he stepped up?
Well, every time we give him a chance to make a play on the catching the ball, he does. He catches the ball. Did a good job at Cincinnati. He does his part, does his role, and it's one of those things you get. As anything else, if you can count on a guy to make a play, then that's a good thing. So we'll go out there and. You know, he'll make the plays that we ask him to make.
So encouraged by what you saw, the chemistry that he showed against Cincinnati.
Sure. I mean, from the day we've been here, he's done everything that we've asked him, and, you know, and he gets in the right place and makes those plays.
It seems like a lot has been made about the zone blocking with the running game. Where do you feel like the linemen are in learning that, and how do you negotiate calling plays like that and switching back to maybe some more man stuff that was successful?
Well, I think we took a look at everything we did and not to get in what we did in the bye week, but we took a look at every play we ran and threw, looked at our strengths and our weaknesses, and we'll build off of that. Whether they're zones or gaps or whatever we do, you know, we'll do what we do best, and then obviously try and tie that to what Tampa Bay does.
I mean, you've been running both anyway, though. I mean, you ran, wasn't one dimensional against Cincinnati. You did a little bit of both.
And, correct.
You know, and
but we did have like some. We had some negatives. We had some negatives in any type of scheme.
Right.
You know, we just have to do what we do better.
Vlad, you know, got a first chance to play in a while for him. You know, just what did you think of what you saw from him?
Well, I obviously played. You know, he did some really good things, and it's still a competition between him and John. And you know, we'll just keep going week to week.
Vlad's a big, strong. I mean, that's his asset, right?
Sure.
Big, strong.
Big and strong. He's got long arms, long levers, and does some good things. And, you know, Juan's worked with him for a year, but, you know, John's has good some good years here with the rest of the guys. So they both have their strengths, and we'll just keep working off it.
Rick Dennison, Bill's offensive coordinator, meeting with the media yesterday. Still a competition at right guard.
It's
troubling, I would just say. come on, we're into the meat of the season here, moving into the meat of the season. You've got to figure it out. Maybe they've got to figure it out, and he just doesn't want to say.
I hope so. I do. I mean, it's so hard to get an offensive line. As we talk about, we need to get the running game going. You need for these guys to understand each other, you know. And now with one guy playing one week, another guy playing the next week, because there's an open competition, that's hard to do at this point in the season, sitting at 3-2, crucial games coming up, you know, where you need to get this running game going. I understand the injury side of it with the left tackle position, but on the right guard, we need to get that one settled.
The other thing Coach Dennison would not address, wouldn't really talk about, was where they're going forward with the run game and the offensive line scheme. And you can't blame him for that. You know, why throw out a blueprint here at Tampa Bay? Here's what our right. plan is. But I would look for kind of more of the same we've had the last couple of weeks, is more integration of power blocking schemes as opposed to the wide zone schemes that they've had. I think we're going to see more of that moving forward.
I hope so. I do. I want to see them be creative in the running game. You know, just be creative and find something that actually works. And I'm talking about action in the backfield. Just be creative with LeSean McCoy and with Tyrod Taylor, because those guys are dynamic weapons that teams have to prepare for. If you're using these guys the right way, teams have to prepare for them. So just be creative in everything that you're doing every week, you know, and I'm not talking trick plays, but just be creative in motions and different things, you know, so that you keep teams on their heels.
Here's a call from Russ in Newfane, New York. Hello, Russ. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, I got a question.
All right.
Years ago, they used to have guards and tackles were always big like Donnie Green. The guards were smaller and faster and would do the pulling. What is the difference between a guard and a tackle nowadays? Why can't they move Cordy Glenn over to the right side and say Henderson is the right guard?
I mean, guys, it's not that simple, really. You know, guys get used to playing tackle. Other guys get used to playing guard. I mean, people can move a certain way. That's why they play one position over another position. There's a lot involved. You can't just move guys inside and out. Some guys like Deion can do it all. Other guys have been playing this one position their entire life, which is tackle. It's hard to go inside. There's more responsibilities, different things that you have to know.
When Cordy Glenn came into the league, many people thought he would be a guard as opposed to a tackle, and it's worked out pretty well for him at left tackle. Now, as I said to Chris Brown, first half hour, the tackle situation, now that Chantrell Henderson is back in the mix and Deion Dawkins has a couple of starts under his belt, and Cordy Glenn apparently will be getting healthier, and Jordan Mills has been in there, I think that bears watching over the next few weeks. You may see some shuffling, that the kind that Russ, I don't know if they're going to move any guards out to play tackle, but maybe some of those tackles that move in inside to play guard. I'm just saying that could happen.
The one thing that always right now, which baffles me, is you have this open competition at the right guard spot. You went out and brought Ryan Groy back for a reason. You matched his offer for a reason, you know, and he stepped in for Eric Wood last year and did a pretty good job. And we know he can play, really play up and down the offensive line, but we know, especially interior line, how come he's not involved in that whole competition? You know, give him an opportunity to step in, as he stepped in last year and did a pretty good job. You didn't hear much about him negative plays wise. So let him get into that competition, and maybe he's the guy that can step in and do it.
Sean McDermott was asked about it yesterday, is if there's any chance that Ryan Groy could get a look at guard, and he says there's a chance, but this is the quote from Sean McDermott: the important part for Ryan is that he does back up Eric Wood as well at the center position, so Ryan gives us some flexibility both at center and as well at guard. For whatever reason, they don't look at him as a guard.
Just a
center. They look at him as a backup center, flexibility.
Wow.
Stuff to watch here in the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Lance calling from Michigan. Hello, Lance. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, Murph and Don. I just wanted to call and ask a question first. I just give my my opinion on that Twitter poll.
Yeah.
The rest on the week, the extra rest is definitely going to be the biggest thing. And I think Coach McDermott will have you guys really hungry coming off that loss to get back and get right. And one more thing before my question. I understand why Tyrod didn't run more in that game. Did he think because it was raining so much he couldn't run? I mean, he's got sacked a lot.
and was just not decisive and taking off like he usually is. He stood there a lot. I don't understand that, what was going on, but the question I wanted to ask about the active and the inactive roster. You know, you have a 53-man roster, and I see these five, six, four guys inactive for the week. Why is not the whole 53 active? Why is there some guys that they have inactive? And I'll let you guys go. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, thanks, Lance.
I couldn't tell you.
You know, it's just they've done it that way. I don't know. I think it has a lot to do with, you know, people being paid, you know, for active games. I think the owners, and this goes back years, if not decades, you know, they don't want huge rosters on game day. You know, so the game day roster now is, 45, 46? Mm-hmm. Not too long ago, I can remember when it was, you know, upper 30s, 40s, and they've gradually expanded it. They haven't done it in a while. I think it has a lot to do with kind of balancing out the talent and making sure the teams don't have an unfair advantage if they stockpile players.
Right, right.
It's kind of an old concept, but I believe that's where it comes from.
I mean, it makes sense. You don't want to have such a big roster where, like you said, you have an unfair advantage. The smaller the roster, the harder it gets for teams, and you have to be good. I mean, you have to be – your backups have to be good, you know, so it just makes it harder for teams. You know, obviously you would love for everybody to be up, but
it's a good question. Yeah. I'll ask around. Time now for NFL True or False. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Donald and I take a look at a couple of NFL issues and try to determine whether it's real or not. Derek Carr's back is completely healed. You saw what went down last week. Derek Carr, just a couple of weeks after suffering three fractured transverse processes in his back, and he took a knee in the loss to the Broncos. Now, he played the other day, didn't play effectively. The Oakland injury report yesterday, they've got a Thursday night game against the Chiefs. He's not even on the injury list, which means that he's fine, just as he was before the injury. Derek Carr's back is completely healed? No way. That's false.
Right. I'm going to go false on this as well. I think he's good enough to play in this game, but I don't think he's completely healed, not after what he had. You know, there's no way he completely healed that fast. Some people do heal faster than others, but no, there's no way.
No. We're going false on that, and that's something to keep an eye on with the Raiders now just a couple of weeks away from playing here in Buffalo. How about this one, another quarterback, Deshaun Watson. The season is going to get more difficult for Deshaun Watson. True, false? I say absolutely true. He's had some good moments, but I think there are bumps in the road coming up for Deshaun Watson. You can see him playing well. You can see him making good decisions from time to time, but I do think there's a still remaining a very steep learning curve for the Texan starter, Deshaun Watson. So I say that's true, Don.
Yeah, I think it's a steep learning curve for him. I think that, you know, teams will start to understand. Look, quarterbacks, we see this every year. Players come into this league, especially quarterbacks, where, you know, they come in and it's like teams can't really figure out what's going on. We've seen it with Colin Kaepernick,
yep.
You know, and Robert Griffin III and all of these guys that will make a splash. But when teams understand what it is that you are doing, and these defensive coordinators – will understand what it is that you're trying to do, and the defensive players themselves, once it gets to that point, they will start to shut down what it is that you are doing, you know. And so I think it's going to get hard for him, and I think it's going to get hard for him starting with their next game at Seattle.
All right, NFL True or False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy.
True on that one. Yeah,
that was true. We're both true there. Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Time now for the Ad Pro Sports High School Football Coach of the Week. In Section 6, Coach Mike Fatta from Cheektowaga led the Warriors to a 28-21 win over Maryvale. Cheektowaga now wins the B1 division title, 7th straight division title for Cheektowaga and Coach Mike Fatta. And in Section 5, the Ad Pro Sports High School Coach of the Week is Dennis Greco from East Rochester Ganada. The Bombers beat Peña 34-14 to go to 6-1. They take the Finger Lakes East Championship. East Rochester now goes into the Class C playoffs as the number one seed. The Ad Pro Sports High School Football Coaches of the Week. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Tanner Vallejo in studio with us in the first hour of the show. Bills' 6th-round draft pick, the linebacker from Boise State. who has a special bond with his younger brother, Hunter Vallejo, 15 years old. Hunter Vallejo is a survivor of pediatric cancer, and Tanner Vallejo talked about his close bond with his brother.
He's a cancer survivor, brain cancer survivor, so at a young age, I had to see him in the hospital, you know, just seeing all those tubes and all the radiation, chemotherapy, stuff like that. Just, you know, really implanted in my head that that I wanted to play for him. And at a young age, you know, he wanted to play. He still wants to play football. But the doctor never, every time he'd ask him, he told him that he couldn't play. I remember going to a doctor's appointment with him one time. He asked if he could be a punter, even just be a punter. And the doctor said, no contact sports. So, you know, I know it's tough on him not being able to play, especially with my two older brothers that played. So I just feel like I'm playing with him on my back.
Tanner Vallejo, who joined us, there's an outstanding feature, video feature on our website and on Buffalo Bills Twitter about Tanner Vallejo and his bond with his brother. Also on the show today, Lorenzo Alexander, Bills captain, Bills outside linebacker. He is spearheading the effort that takes place just about an hour or so from now all over Western New York. Five different community organizations in Buffalo and Western New York with all kinds of attention from Bills players. And Lorenzo Alexander talked about that today with us.
This is just a way we can do it as an organization. I think when you do things together, it carries so much more weight to it. So we still want to keep the conversation going, but we also want to serve be diligent in the process of actually creating change and not just talking about it all the time, but doing things that will actually lead to it as well. And that's continue to do what we've been doing in the community. The Buffalo Bills has done a great job with that.
Lorenzo Alexander, we'll hear more from him later in the week on Friday. Big show tomorrow, Donald, with practice beginning. Chris Brown will report from the practice field. Thurman Thomas will be with us. Jerry Smith, high school football coach at St. Francis. You got a game coming up Thursday night.
We got a game Thursday night. I'm looking forward to it. It's been a little while since we called the last game, so I'm looking forward to this one.
We'll preview that game for you tomorrow on the show. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Ryan Gates is our intercom board op. Production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. Join us tomorrow at noon as the practice week begins for the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.